Hello, and welcome to episode 222 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is Keith, and I'm currently playing some Signar.
This is Josh, and I'm playing Double Colossals.
Nigel, Double Colossals.
John, Double Colossals.
Chad.
Nailed it.
All right, this is getting to be an epidemic.
I think just here.
Yeah, well, I mean, in our group, though. Yeah. Like, every time we turn around, we're trying to out-colossal each other.
Well, now we're just getting stupid about it. It's literally like kids, like, I'll bring the frogs, you bring the scorpions, we'll just throw them in a sand pit, see what happens. We're just smashing colossals together.
Yes, this although I really enjoyed the last game we put the Harkovich Gorton double-on-double list.
I mean, this
was short and sweet, but it was kind of fun.
Was this not exactly our fear when the Colossals first came out? They're like, they're going to take over the game.
The thing
it's
going
to be nothing but these stupid giant robots forever.
It was literally
this
my
is
hope.
An isolated thing. I'm just going to throw
we're
that
doing
out
it
there.
To ourselves and loving it. So what's the problem?
Yeah, it's actually
what's happening.
It's super fun.
Yeah.
Like, it sort of fulfills the promise of the game.
Yeah.
And Nigel, you had nailed it on the head like two episodes ago or whether you're like, well, it's kind of nice that people can actually play with Jax.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, a couple, because you don't really have enough focus to actually play a lot of Jax and, like, fulfill the, you know, whatever, the promise of the game when
exactly.
it's told it to you.
I think that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. But this way, you're just like, big stompy robots, I'm coming to get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
God, it's like the exact opposite for Hordes.
Freaking gargantuan.
It really is.
I'm so sorry you've gotten to play battle group heavy lists for so long.
Yeah. I haven't.
Yeah, trolls haven't, unless you're Calandra.
Or Epic Doomshaper.
Or
Shaper.
Doomshaper.
Yeah.
Screw you guys.
Or regular Doomshaper. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I have literally no one I can play a battle group heavy like with.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, I guess Damiano kind of.
You can kind of play lots of battle group heavies now. Or lots of battle group heavy lists. Because Double Colossals work really good in Mercs,
yeah,
it turns
exactly.
out.
Yeah, Mercs are the nuclear option for Double Colossals.
Pretty good. Mm. Pretty good.
Yeah, when you start doing things like, I guess I'll be power 26, all boosted damage rolls. That's pretty good. And a free charge, why not?
Or get my 2D3 boosted 13s a boosted 15. Mm. Or sorry, 2D3 boosted 15s a boosted 17, and then four...
boosted 23s?
23s.
Oh, no, just
not
23s.
Boosted, just four 23s. You're like, yeah, seems better.
Yeah. Yeah. You make that work.
Mm-hmm. Ah, sweet Bart. Mm-hmm. Sweet Bart. I'm so sad he's not on the ADR right now.
You actually shouldn't be, because...
Now he's going to be on there with Durgan.
Well, what I was going to say is he'll like the chances are he'll either be on there on Durgan, which is good for whatever, or he will be on there with Damiano, which obviously, like...
Damiano!
There's actually, like, a really good chance that, like, now it's, like, 50-50 shot that he and Damiano are on there at the same time, so... You should like that.
That'll be nice.
Yeah.
That'll
Wait, what do you like about Damiano? Other than Deadeye, obviously.
I mean, Deadeye.
Pretty much Deadeye. Okay.
Death March to Lexi and the Risen.
Okay, his feet's also
what
really good.
What don't you like about Damiano?
Yeah, actually, Damiano's
good. Foot's good.
Damiano's boom howlers are not so good.
Yeah. No, I really love Damiano, but I didn't know if he fits into the double colossal conversation or whatever.
Oh, no.
No.
No, he's like...
I love Damiano.
I mean, he makes Def 11 galleons, I guess.
Yeah.
Which isn't the most
exciting. Like, Surefoot bubble off of a... Big Galleon is cool or whatever, but...
Feet's interesting. He's almost Harkovich, basically.
Damiano and...
I mean, they're an armor lower to start with, and it's only plus two instead of plus three.
I learned something new today. I had no idea that Colossals benefit from the melee over an obstacle.
Over an obstacle.
Or, penalty.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
they sure do.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever played it that way, but I don't know that it's ever really come up. I'm not sure. But now that I'm playing Double Colossals, and mine are Def 10, so going from Def 10 to Def 12 is kind of a big deal. Like, it's fairly significant.
It's pretty rare that you end up putting a Colossal behind an obstacle that you don't yourself create and then remove whenever you want to, just because it's hard to get them over those obstacles. So I think that's
unless they're speed 7.
Yeah, but I think that's why you don't see it come up that often. Yeah,
Chad, your days are coming. It's going to be Gunbjorn, Double Mountain Queen.
Double Mountain Queen. Yeah, Double Glacier King.
I like Mountain Queen better.
I like Mountain Queen the best.
Me too.
Particularly if she's better than the Mountain King. Then I really like it.
Lunar Soul actually got me on the forums lately talking about how he was pairing Mountain King with Doomshaper 2. And you know, he's like couching it and like he's like, I know it's not the most original thing ever, but hear me out. And he basically plays it so he doesn't cast any of the upkeeps at all. Until he needs to, and then he just has the Rune Bearer like throw Wild Aggression on whatever he wants to. But then he just uses the Mountain King to do two Pow 15 Primal Shocks a turn, like kind of turning it into a storm wall. Which I'm like,
that's
I don't know why I've never considered doing that before. But that's really, that sounds cool.
Primal Shock's range 8.
It's 8 off of the beast.
8 off of the beast.
And then strength equal, or POW equal to their current, or to their base strength.
You also get your POW 14 spray, right? Well. So.
POW 16 spray.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
So it's two boosted 15s and a boosted 16.
And then the 15s are when Doomshaper activates.
Yeah.
So it kind of, like I said, it kind of turns them into like having two big guns off Stormwall. Yeah. And they're Rat 7.
Yeah.
And magic.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. It's not terrible.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
That's pretty sweet, actually.
I actually like that.
It's going to be better with the Mountain Queen.
you need to get skirt sculpted on Mountain Queens.
Not a skirt. You just need to find like an American Girl doll tutu and put that on there.
That also would work.
Just straight up like just a tutu.
Yeah.
That I was having this conversation, I think, with you, Nigel, and Fox and Colin. I think it was on the road to Omaha. Maybe not. Where we were talking about the troll gargantuans came up and the fact that they should be the best with Doomshaper is the one who goes and gets them. He's like the guy for which dire trolls are a recent innovation for troll military functions, because they were considered like too wild, uncontrollable until Doomshaper is like, no. We can make this work. And now some of the other warlocks are using like the tamer ones. In the fluff, you only ever see blitzers and bombers, basically, with anybody except Doomshaper, the well-behaved, the more trained of them. And so the gargantuans are on a whole different scale. Like power-wise, they are probably the most misrepresented model from fluff to rules, as far as like how badly their power has to shrink to fit them into the game at all. Mm-hmm. And then to get, and then unfortunately they shrunk too far. But Doomshaper is the only one who's crazy enough to try to control one at this juncture until he teaches other warlocks how to do it. So but his like main thing is Goad, and Goad doesn't work with them. I don't know. It was a frustration.
Mm-hmm.
It's super frustrating. Yes.
We're like, yeah. I want these to be great, and I want them to be great with Doomshaper.
And then in the fluff, how they're like, literally, like the Circle Army is trying to unleash them because they're like, oh, they're gonna eat the entire world, and I'm like, no, they're not. Like 10 Wolves of Orboros will just kill one.
They will literally miss grabbing the world when they try to eat
that too. Also, as soon as they go up against a robot, they apparently don't care about anything anymore. They're like, oh, I killed that robot. It wasn't very exciting.
No.
It's not worth screaming over.
It's not satisfying to crunch a robot.
Yeah. So goddamn stupid.
Well, I'm glad we got here. That didn't take long.
Where did you expect?
The Mountain Queen is coming.
Yeah. Mm. Speaking of, it's a week till lock and load. Like a week from today, we will all be in Seattle.
Yep. So probably no podcast next week.
Unless we take the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
That's not happening.
You could take the equipment.
I mean, we might be able to do like a...
I mean, Nigel's driving.
A Sunday night podcast, because we'll all be there and it'll be like kind of quiet. And
I think that's going to be at the end of like my 40-hour War Machine bender, so I might be pretty wrecked at that juncture.
It's perfect time to podcast.
Perfect.
It's legitimately true.
Otherwise, I mean, I don't know if I really want to skip a week. Well, we could skip a week, I guess.
So we'll play it by ear. For a week of skippage.
Yeah, we'll play it by ear.
Yep, but you can make a general estimate by how well we've done at podcasting from cons previously.
Yeah,
I wasn't even gonna say anything. I was just gonna be like, okay, let's take the equipment because we might podcast.
All right, we'll leave the equipment here. We'll borrow somebody else.
I mean, there's no reason not to put it in the van, right?
There is lots of reasons to not put it in the van.
What?
Well, traveling with it is actually hard on it.
Is it?
That's how the other one got screwed up. I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah. I've been getting annoyed at... I'm probably cutting this out, too. I've been getting annoyed at how much we've been traveling with it, too, after you set it up, and you were like, all right, we're just going to have it set up in this basement, and it's just going to be here forever. And we keep, like, picking it up and putting it away. And every time we do that, like, all of the settings get screwed up, and it's just like... Like, last week's episode sounded like crap. Like, it sounded terrible. Because all these... The equalizers were all jacked off, so...
Cut that in.
So yes, next week is lock and load.
Two times.
How many of us will be sporting double colossals at lock and load? I am.
I am.
So two?
Not me.
You're talking about it.
No, well, my Colossal got destroyed.
Maybe I'll buy two. Maybe they'll have the Glacier King
there. You've got one on the way. You've got reinforcements coming.
Maybe they'll have the Glacier King there, and it'll be so good that I'll buy two of them.
He's being coy. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
And assemble them.
And assemble
and play them.
Well, that's how I got my Mountain King assembled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, Chad was so excited that day. He stayed up all night and waited in line. Got his Mountain King.
So I was number two.
Yeah, and then he was like, he's like looking at it. He's like, I'm not sure if it's good. Then I'm like, uh-oh, danger.
even with the brand new shine on things that makes you like them way more than you should, you're like, you're trying to love it and you can't manage.
You got like five texts like that, like as soon as it went on the internet of people being like, it looks bad. And I'm like, I'm going to play it a dozen times before I decide whether it's bad or not. So I did.
Have you played it a dozen times?
Yeah, way more than
that. Way more than that.
Like, I've played it probably 50 times.
And what's your opinion?
I don't want to focus on
that. News and announcements.
I do not want to focus on
that. Chad's better at actually getting things on the table before he makes judgments than I am. A lot of players are, actually.
Yeah. pretty much everyone I have ever met that plays this game is better at that than you.
News at 11. Wow. Way to drop some knowledge on your friends that we all didn't know, yeah. Keith. Yeah. Well done.
I think we might actually have talked about that on the last podcast.
We did. We mentioned how you weren't going to play Haley 3 if she doesn't have Deadeye. I was like, yeah.
Like, literally the only reason you're actually even considering playing her right now is because her name is Haley.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
true. Yeah. Like, if it was
she's got the tactical spark.
If this was just, like, a funky Warcaster unit that was, like, epic Kara Sloane,
you'd be all
like,
in.
You'd be like, meh, probably not.
Tactical Supremacy would get me pretty excited.
I mean, you would be excited. But you'd be like, she's not going to take the place of my regular rotation.
Yeah.
I'll have to see what else is on the card. Yeah. That's exactly what he would say.
I need to see what else is on the card.
This is a propo of nothing, but I guess it just reminded me of it because Haley has, like, multiple Haleys in one unit. But I was talking to Josh earlier today about how it would be cool if there was a Warcaster in the game that could, like, cast a spell or had or began the game with, like, an extra duplicate model. And he had, like, a body double rule where he had, like, a guy that was like pretending to be him, you know, like his body double basically, like to stop him from being assassinated,
doing it crow style.
And he could, and like once per game, you could, you know, put him out, and then whichever one dies, like the other one is the real one.
Yeah,
like I think it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
It'd be pretty sweet and fluffy and cool.
It's a caster you have to kill twice, basically,
like once per game or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
In Warhammer Fantasy, there's the character called Von Karstein or whatever, and he's super cool because you like kill him. And then he's one of the few characters that's not like game breaking. And then you kill him and he just pops up in a unit somewhere else. Like he's just like, that wasn't me. And then he just like shows up in like the back rank of a unit or whatever. Like, oh.
Like he's, yeah, it's like Crow basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's super cool.
We actually do have news to talk to, some slight spoilers, spoilage from last week. There was
that's new? That's new information?
We didn't talk about it last week.
Okay.
It was after. So,
yeah, it was after the chaos.
There was a feat spoiled from the league. This feat is named Bloodlust, I believe, and I can't remember the exact wording on it, but it's basically living models in this model's battle group gain +2 strength and armor.
Mm-hmm.
And then while you're attacking an enemy model, while you are charging an enemy model in his control radius, you automatically hit with your charge attacks.
Yeah, I think it's enemy models in this model's control area automatically hit by charge attacks.
Yes. Yeah. The hot speculation is that that is Chromax feat.
Yeah, great odds on that being Chromax feat.
I was initially concerned when my very first thought was, oh no, we got a Cephalix Warcaster. And I don't like the feat.
Nice.
I think it's been confirmed not to be a Cephalix Warcaster. There was a tweet.
Because there was a rumor that it was a Cephalix Warcaster.
Oh.
I've heard both.
There was a tweet from Schick, I think, where someone was like, is the next Warcaster Cephalix? And I think it basically shook down to like, no, the next Cephalix Warcaster is like a year or more away.
Okay. I mean,
well, that doesn't mean he's not in the next book.
True.
Yeah. I'm not super anti like getting. It's just, I'm having a hard time imagining Cephalix working without the unique tools. Because it almost felt like that faction was just built around Exelon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a faction that certainly doesn't work with a warcaster less powerful than Thexis,
right?
Because it's like, well, if it's he a had house a, of cards,
if
and
he
none
had
of the pieces
like that,
are very strong,
then you'd have to imagine his spellist and abilities would be crazy.
Well, but so that was what I was trying to imagine.
The reason everyone thinks that this is Chromax feat is because it specifies living models in his battle group.
Yeah. Right?
And we were talking at dinner.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about
just the
this
fact that it even specifies like living versus or whatever.
The only real faction that can do
that
is
pretty much the only faction in the game that can do that is Circle.
The only faction.
No, minions can as well.
Bone swarms.
With bone swarms.
But it's literally just bone swarms.
Just bone swarms.
Whereas, like, Circle, there is, you know, all the different kinds of wolves and all the different kinds of wolves. And
Chromac has had specifications between living and non-living battle group in the past.
Right.
Well.
And then someone even pointed out, too, that that feat has a lot of aspects of P. Chromac's spell list, like, kind of built in.
Yeah.
So, or at least the plus two armor, I guess, anyway. I guess nothing else.
No, I'm reasonably confident that that's
plus Bloodlust. Like is
pretty
Chromacky. Plus it's Chromacky and it's Wrathrocky.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about that? How do we feel about that feat in Circle? It seems pretty good.
I think it's solid. It's another.
Getarex gets more monstrous.
Yeah.
He becomes a nightmare.
It's a great feat to save. To use as a Gorax replacement. So it's more. Anytime a Circle Warlock, I can feel like I can use them. There are avenues to use them without a Gorax. It's pretty exciting.
Also, just double Goraxing is also.
Oh, doubling up also fine.
Right. Because I mean, then if you run into the problem where Gorax, like now Getarex kills a Colossal,
right,
and then is armored 21.
Yep.
And, like that's a pain in the ass.
Yep.
And then also because the charging aspect of it, the auto-hitting charges, that's not restricted to battle group. That's his that's everything in his control radius.
Yeah.
Or that's whatever. That's charging enemy models in his control radius, rather. Which is another thing, that reason that I think it's Chromac. I was telling this to Josh. The wording on that charging enemy models thing is similar to the wording on Crusher, where you have to attack enemy models in so-and-so's control radius. Because it's not just models making a charge, automatically hit. It's while charging enemy models in his control radius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, maybe that's like a Wrathrock thing.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's kind of interesting. If you start thinking about some of the interactions that Circle can do, at least Blood Trackers, it's like guaranteed quick work.
Exactly.
Does this make Brennos work?
No, it does not.
Damn it.
Oh, man, that was a glorious conversation.
Oh, my God. Crump and I had a lot of fun. Nigel was like, no, we'll get there. And he starts like diving into the jank tank to try to fix Brennos. And every time he comes up, we just slap him back down.
He's just like, actually, that rules interaction doesn't work.
Yeah, he's like, well, no, he just makes it cheaper, so you spam winter coats all over the place. Like, A, winter coat is self-only, and B, it does not make it cheaper for the caster to throw the animus.
Other than that, it totally works.
Yeah. What's that?
Other than that, it totally works.
It's totally fine for Brennos to be terrible. Circle can have some terrible models.
No, it's true.
Yeah. I mean, Circle Christmas finally ended. Yeah. Now it's Troll Christmas.
They just got a perpetually huge all right at the end. Like,
you shut up. It's about time it's Troll Christmas.
It's been Troll Christmas forever.
Forever.
For like a year.
That's
we have always been at war.
With Troll Christmas?
With Troll Christmas.
It was Circle Christmas for like 5 years.
I don't remember
years.
What you're talking about.
Circle Christmas is a myth.
Yes.
That is a punishment.
It's a lie. Yes.
You guys drank some.
You're
going
to go to reconditioning.
Yeah. Also,
you've already been there.
I feel like the stone nerf canceled Christmas.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is just our moment of hate, I guess. If we're just going to keep doubling down on these 1984 references.
Yeah, sure.
All right, good. Or however that goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate you guys.
We love you, Chad. Well, Josh doesn't, but I do.
I love Chad.
What else is sweet with auto-hitting charge attacks in Circle?
The thing is, a lot of Circle stuff hits really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Morag is already basically auto-hits because he's mat 10 when he charges. Mat 12 sometimes.
Yeah.
Nigel proofs your army, which can only be good.
Nigel
so that means no I will guys. Straight up miss, yeah.
Is there anything that has a really big initial attack, like any beasts that have... There's no, like, angel kind of equivalent, right?
Yeah, there's no AP, I don't think. Anything you have to hit?
No. Are there any low mat like models that are otherwise really good.
The mannequins.
Brenos.
I said, but are Brenos, otherwise right? really good.
Oh, okay. All right. Never mind.
It does. It specifies faction for the charges. Yeah, it specifies faction for the charges as well. So I was thinking like, ooh, Swamp Shamblers, but no.
Do they get free charges out of it?
Don't think so.
I think Blood Trackers are the best.
Yeah, the like auto quick works pretty sweet.
And then also maybe the Blood Weavers. Maybe.
You know what's interesting is that feat. I wonder if it'll get circle players to charge more often because they almost never charge with anything. They're almost always.
I think that's changing with the Shifting Stone nerf.
I agree, but it's kind of nice because if you play with a fuel cache and you get a free charge and then you auto hit with it, like it changes your dice math quite a bit into a lot of things that aren't normally possible without a Gorax become super possible.
There's a lot of corner case scenarios too where. I mean, even you were looking at, because it's similar in ways to Striker's feat, where once you go into the territory of auto-hitting certain models, it doesn't really matter what their POW is. And Striker helps a little bit because he adds the extra damage dice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like you were saying, like, charging with Trenchers is kind of funny then because they're speed 7, they have a low POW, but when they and a crabby mat, but when they auto-hit, now they can maybe...
Rangers is what I was
Rangers, about. Sorry, not Trenchers. Sorry, Rangers, yes. But I'm thinking... You know, there are options in Circle where they would not traditionally charge with them, but if they could guarantee a hit, they might, like Druids, for instance.
Yeah, Druids are kind of
because they have reach, good speed, and then they're usually sort of out in front of the army, and they're difficult to kill if you don't have blast damage.
They don't have Battle Wizard, do they? Because Crump would be, like, going off right now.
They do not have Battle Wizard. That would be amazing, though.
Is there anything in the faction of the Battle Wizard?
Maybe
like,
Chromax
so
has
hard
elite cadre
it.
Druids. I doubt it. That would make perfect sense.
I highly doubt it.
But I don't know. Yeah, maybe I don't know. I don't. It's just maybe the feat's not like crazy in Circle, but
I wonder if we'll see like.
It
any
still seems like a decent feat. Like when I read that feat, I was like, oh, certainly I would take that.
Yeah. Certainly an upgrade from Chromax's previous feat.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Do you think we'll see some bounding?
No.
Hmm? No way?
No. The beast it's attached to is too bad.
Some what? Bounding?
It's 2 points shy of being a Warpal Stalker and in no way competes with a Warpal Stalker.
He's talking about the Gnarlhorn Satyr.
Yeah. Actually, I think it's 1 point
shy. What's its animus to?
It's just plus two, movement and plus two to hit on charge attacks.
Circle players never used it because they always need sort of the Gorax Animus.
Yeah,
but I was
for
just
the
thinking
strength.
Yeah,
here's some crazy. What don't Arguses have combo strike?
Yes.
Oh, there you go, Boosh. Arguses combo strike with plus two strength, auto hit.
I mean the thing,
and
is,
then plus two armor.
It also depends on what spells he has, right? Because if he his feet alone isn't like enough reason to run. Really anything.
I mean, we're just in
We're just in speculation land.
Yeah,
we
could probably even move on. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting feat.
Yeah, I'm just. Good? After our discussion, I felt better because I was like, okay, maybe I won't get a Cephalix caster.
I'm hoping for you to get a Cephalix caster.
Yeah, I am too now.
No, please no.
I would be okay with like a. A steroid raging Exelon that runs like battle group heavy models. If he has something like Escort and D Cell and unlimited focus,
he's kind of have. I like how he was just like, well, you know, D Cell.
I mean, yeah,
I don't think to convince me to run battle group heavy for them, they would have to like. I can't even. Blah, it's tough.
Batten
would be a start.
Yeah, Batten, like some kind of general armor buff against shooting, and some kind of movement increase is actually
Shadow
what
pack.
It would require. Like that would that would actually be fine. Like Shadow Pack and Escort would be enough if he had some focus efficiency. Because 7 point wreckers, like if he can run like a bunch of wreckers, that's actually pretty.
I
gross.
Hope you get a caster with Shadow Pack and Escort. Yes. Perfect.
Perfect. What am I missing?
Thought they're both upkeeps on
the Oh, yeah. Derp. Thank you. Maybe mobility.
Mobility.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's three focus out of his pool already.
Yeah, but he's just going to be able to allocate.
One for three like Denegra does?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Nailed it.
I know, I'm 99% sure there's not going to be a new conversions caster, but I really want there to be one.
there won't be.
I know.
Yeah. I mean,
there won't be. There's actually nothing conversions in the new book.
That's what we heard, yeah. Rumor-wise.
We're talking, John mentioned the other day that he was not enjoying, because he's got conversions coming, and you haven't played hardly at all.
Not a lot, no.
But just talking about how there isn't a, it's not a, convergence is not a terribly interesting thought exercise because there's not a great deal of depth to the faction.
There's just not enough stuff to think about.
And that's sort of, I think that's just sort of what it is. And I don't think necessarily that means it's not good. It might just not be for you since you kind of need a thought exercise to keep you interested in.
I feel like the thought exercise is in actually playing. With the army, probably. Mm-hmm.
That could be, but that's not where I get off in the game. Yeah. I mean, it's just the facts. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. All right.
Charlie's going to listen to this podcast and then
kill himself.
Going to cry.
It was confirmed that Convergence is not getting anything.
Yeah.
I don't remember. So what about the Prime Complex?
There's something about
it's gonna, the a no-quarter release.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Oh, a no-quarter release. That's a thing they can do?
Yeah.
I guess that's where the Black Dragons came from.
Well, they also said when they released... Convergence. They're like, not only will, like, they might occasionally get an update in the books or in No Quarter. Like, they said that when they released Convergence. So,
yeah. All right.
Weird. Okay. Sorry. Go on.
Yeah. I have had some kind of weird thoughts with Convergence, though. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Where is this going?
No, I'm just saying, like I kind of want
shirtless LeCant.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. No.
Weird thoughts with Macaque.
With both LeCant and with Mother, I kind of want to play the Shield Guards.
Steel Soul Protectors.
The Steel Soul Protectors, because they charge at POW 14 if they have positive charge or if they get a harm off, and that's a pretty reasonable charge. They have good defensive stats. They have a lot of boxes.
Yeah,
and they're extra Shield Guards. And extra, like playing with the Aspis. Like, having random Shield Guards in your list for 2 points seems like a lot of fun. Because Shield Guards throw things off for people so bad in a lot of ways.
Can.
Well, I mean, you've also been realizing that the power of the Aspis is additionally in the fact that it has 32 boxes on a light.
Yep.
With a Phoenix Field. Mm. And it's just an absurd... It's another one of those pieces that kind of breaks the math of the game.
It's kind of like the Vanguard. The Vanguard always requires boxes. More effort to remove than it's actually worth.
Yeah, 32 boxes for 4 points. Is there anything else in the game that even comes close to that efficiency?
Protectorate lights. Yeah. 26 boxes.
26 with more armor. Okay. The thing that the stupid Aspis does is it also heals D6 a turn, which when you're like, actually I was thinking about it with my Varos list. I kind of want to go to being able to side out Imperatus to side into like 4 Aspices. So you can put like 4 Aspis and then double Hyperion, and then the Aspices can screen for the Hyperions.
Let stupid things run 16 inches.
Yeah.
Blah.
Seems good.
And they have 2 attacks in beatback. Like,
do they have any gun?
Nope.
No.
Ah, why?
Well, that's okay. Like, but just having like
32 boxes for 4 points.
Yeah.
Good.
Is why.
Good job, PP. Nailed it, PP. Actually.
But 4
you
shield
guys are
guards
on top of things.
With auto healing D6 is like that. It's because I did that against Keith. I played with 2, and we played Colossals on Colossals, and he was having a heck of a time.
He's just running him into my way.
Yeah.
It's like I had my Colossals were in range to go punch his Colossals, which is what I wanted to do. But I couldn't because there were stupid Aspices in my way.
Frustrating.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'll kill that. How many boxes does that thing have? I'm like, 32. He's like, what? I'm like, well, it only has 20, but it has 12 in the shield. He's like, ah! How is that possible?
Freaking Phoenix Field's so good.
It's really good. Hey, did you know Imperatus has a Phoenix Field?
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, I literally didn't know that.
He's a Phoenix.
Yeah, I know. Like,
wait,
seriously? Yeah.
I've
never healed D6 on Imperatus ever.
What?
Ever in the history of ever. So.
This is your podcast.
Yeah. So, listen to everything John says.
Yeah, I couldn't even figure out a good way.
You know what?
That.
I think Imperatus is a fine buy without a Phoenix Field.
We should also mention that.
You were just giving your opponents a chance, basically.
Yeah. Like,
Well, it's just like he plays Snapchat without the Maneater.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, everybody makes mistakes. So.
He's also primarily been playing Virals for like 2 or 3 months, and he lost a bet to Colin as to what's on his caster's card.
And that did also happen.
Yeah, that did indeed.
Oh, my God. I'm so sad I wasn't there for that.
It was amazing.
This is a good story because during the game, in one of the turns, John was like, he was considering a weird plan. And I was like, oh, like, what you thinking about there, John? You trying to come up with an eliminator assassination? And he's like, no, no, no. And then he went to Stranglehold, like, needing a 12 to get, and that was the crazy plan or whatever, to hold my Colossal.
That was a sweet plan.
Yeah, it worked out fine. It was fine. But so I had asked him that question, and then later, Colin, we were talking about ways Virus could eliminate Storm Pods, because, like, he doesn't have a gun. I'm like, well, you can just nuke it. He's got Eliminator. And John was like, no, he doesn't.
He's got Stranglehold. I thought he only had one nuke.
Colin's like 10. It's like 10. John's like $10. I don't think he even suggested the bet.
No, Colin suggested the bet.
Okay, $10.
Yeah. I should have known, though, when Colin was so keen to
bet.
Well,
he's only to put money on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
It's over, which is it's infuriating because it's still Colin. So you like,
it's actually,
I got to see this at the bitter end.
That's actually really cagey of Colin because, like, $10 is an amount that John will, like, snap to. So, like, you know, but, like, I can see, like, for Colin, like, the enthusiasm getting the better of him, just being like, my next paycheck. Like, and then John, of course, is going to be like, okay, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got hustled.
Yeah. Good job.
I did. I got absolutely hustled because who knew that Virus 1 had Eliminator?
Colin.
I did.
And you also weren't aware of Unhallowed Avenger.
Oh, yeah, he does have Hallowed Avenger. Yeah, I've never used that.
That was amazing.
Well, it doesn't do much for your list.
No.
So.
Well, Imperatus might be kind of cool.
Speaking of things that you didn't know, John.
Oh, God. Here we go.
How does Bart buy his milk?
I don't know, Josh. How does Bart buy his milk?
By the galleon. Yarr.
Colin would have loved it.
Yep.
Colin would have loved it.
Yep.
Whoever sent that to you?
I came up with that one today while we were playing.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was just like,
flash in the pan.
I said something about...
It wasn't funny.
I said something about Galleon, and I was just like, that's got to be. That's a punchline.
It could be a couple punchlines.
Yeah. Sounds like Galleon. There's a punchline.
Yep, exactly. Like, Crump actually got to witness my pirate joke creation, like, as it happened. He was very grateful.
I think he said something about never wanting to be on the podcast.
That Crump is so negative.
No, I guess I am. I'm right in that boat with him. God, they just suck.
You're Crump 2.0.
That's not nice.
Do you guys want to do any dojo? Dojo?
Maybe in a second. I did want to cover something. Dojo? I did want to cover something with Josh.
Uh-huh.
You and I have a bet? Yeah.
Well, we're working on it. We haven't worked out the details.
I think we should do it right now.
Okay.
All right. So Josh and I are doing a weight loss bet, and we're going to start it the day after I get back from Lock and Load.
I mean, maybe. We could also start it now, or we could start it when you go to Lock and Load.
How about we just do it the day after I get back from Lock and Load?
Because that is advantage to you.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
Maybe you should go to Lock and Load, then it'd be advantage to you, too.
Anyway, continue.
Yeah. And then we'll just bet. Shaved head bet.
No. I'm not doing a shave head. Like, that's just not happening.
He can't lose to Tom Cruise. Yeah. The
because,
same rise.
Like, I'm not going to give you something super sweet here because the reality is that the nature of this bet is such that I am significantly disadvantaged in it.
Yeah.
What if we make it even?
And it's mostly just to encourage you to actually stop doubling down on Little Debbie's.
Yeah, so the diet wasn't so good. Wasn't so great today, I have to admit. But
that's what you said on Sunday.
Monday. And Monday.
It's
and
a
Monday.
Battle. It's a
Every day is a battlefield.
Yep.
Just strewn with cake landmines.
All right, so how about this? I will lose 40 pounds before you lose 20 pounds to make the bet even.
That probably still doesn't make the bet even.
I bet it makes it a lot more even.
It's more even than we both lose, but you're still advantaged.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I maybe have 40 pounds to lose.
You could probably.
I'm going to be pretty skinny after that. Uh-huh. So.
I mean, it'll be good. It'll be a good start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me? So what do you want to bet?
Let's see. What was our... Our other bet was
Colts Bengals.
Yeah, and it was, what was it?
You had to be nice to him, or he had to be nice to
you. He had to tell pirate jokes for
no,
a
no,
month.
No, I just had to be nice to you for a month.
And you had to tell the pirate jokes. That's why you told the pirate jokes for a month.
Yeah, that did also happen.
I thought that was just part of me being nice.
No, that was part of the bet.
John's rewriting the history. He's like, oh, yeah. I was
so nice. I just stepped up to tell those pirate jokes. Yeah, no, that didn't happen.
Seems like something I would do.
No. All right, so something that doesn't change my physical appearance.
All right, so how about this? You have to be nice to me for 30 days.
I mean, that's... Yeah, sure, that's easy. I mean, I'm sorry. If I lose, sorry, listeners, it'll be the worst month of podcasts that you've ever heard.
People will be like, hey, John, can I buy you a Twinkie? Yeah.
Just be like, if I lose, I'll just be like, sorry, podcasters, it's going to start next week. Don't listen for 4 weeks.
All right, we'll come up with something anyway. I guess
I mean... That's all you had was either I shave my head or I'm nice to you. Like that's all you've
know.
Got.
I don't know.
What do you want me to do? What do you want the bet to
do
be?
You guys have any suggestions? What would be a good bet?
This is not. This
how
is
about
not my
for the
not my jam.
How yeah. about for pirate jokes?
Open it up to the podcast listeners.
If I win the bet, pirate jokes are gone forever.
We could open it up to the podcasters. I'm fine with that. We tried to kill the pirate. I tried to kill the pirate jokes and. It didn't work.
Alan, you wasn't having it.
They're revenants. Yar.
Two for one. Two for one.
All right. We'll ask the listeners what we
should. Yeah, listeners, what should... So this is a bet in which, out of the kindness of my heart, I'm taking like a pretty stacked...
I have to lose twice as much weight as you.
Pretty stacked. And you have three times as much weight as I do to lose. So,
it's out of love. It's out of love.
Yeah. This is basically to save John's life and prevent me from teabagging him. So come up with a reasonable bet that you think, like, you know, will properly punish me when I can't lose 20 pounds in the time John loses 40. But definitely punish John if he can't lose 40 pounds in the time I lose 20.
I have confidence in our listeners to come up with something delightful.
I also feel like I'm getting set up now.
Why would you ever enter into another bet with me? As soon as I suggested it, I was just like, he'll say no immediately. One, because it's entering into a bet with me. Two, because it involves losing weight.
No, I want to lose weight.
I know you
do. What you didn't take into account was his addictive gambling nature.
You're right.
Yeah.
There is a bit of a problem.
That was the X factor.
It was indeed. So yeah. For you 40, me 20. Is that what you want?
How about 20 and 20? Let's make it fair, fair and balanced.
We can do 20 and 20. I just the bet needs to properly reflect that, like the penalties of the bet. Like
I mean,
mine,
if it's going
to
be fair, then shouldn't it be like kind of a percentage, like body?
Yeah,
block,
like my
body weight
my loss, my penalty should. Well, yes, that would be fair, but. Again, this is, like, I actually made this bet while watching John stuff his face with a little Debbie.
What? after he doubled down on sushi because it was half price. And then,
yeah. And okay, I was just like, go ahead, Nigel.
I was thinking, what if we got creative, like almost like ice in the spirit of like Ice Bucket Challenge-y, we could basically say the loser of this bet has to reenact Splash Dance. Like in the garage. So we'll basically get like, I'm a maniac, or Flash Dance. So you have to reenact that scene with the, like, the leg warmers and the chair and the water bucket on you. And while we play the music, I'll have a computer while we'll be watching the movie. So you'll be able to kind of like match the choreography a little bit. And we'll just put that on video on YouTube.
Put it on YouTube, put it on
like
the 30 seconds. Facebook, tag
30 seconds of I'm a maniac on the floor.
I mean, I'm fine with that. I will do that. John, not only will I enter into this bet with you that I'm pretty much guaranteed to lose, I will then make an idiot out of myself so that you'll lose 20 pounds. That's how much I love you.
You're such a good guy.
Yeah, I know.
And the best part is it plays. Like, it doesn't really matter, like, the body type of anybody reenacting the scene. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if
anybody's, it's better if John hasn't lost 20 pounds. Yeah. Like, that's pretty much the most perfect outcome
but
that anyone can hope
for. But it's still hilarious if Josh does it.
Yeah,
like, just,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm down with that.
All right, it's a bet. All right,
so 2020.
2020. Okay, I'm in.
Also, the best part of this is going to be, like, opening the garage door so we get good lighting and then getting, like, the camera set up on, like, a C-stand. And then I'll hold the computer, like, go! Like, take 10. Not good enough. Yeah. Oh, it's going to be so good. Yeah.
Take 10?
Right. It might take 10.
How about 30-20?
30-20. You have to lose 30, I have to lose 20.
Yeah.
That wasn't
if I lose 30, I'm... border,
pretty ripped at that point.
Yeah, I'll be in really good shape. That'll take probably 4 months.
So what do we have time frames? Is there a time frame?
No, it's this? Whichever one of us does it first. Yeah. So it's possible that this that this could never be going on to that,
like next year. Yeah.
Holy shnikes.
Yeah.
So we need a starting weights.
Yeah, we have to have a weigh-in.
Yeah, we'll have a weigh-in.
Yep.
And it needs to happen soon.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll start it
right after lock and load.
We can do 2020 if we start now.
That seems unfair. Because I'm going to be traveling.
What?
Because I'm going to be traveling.
That's as fair as it possibly gets.
Right? Like,
that's literally as fair as it possibly
Josh
gets.
Josh will literally jog home tonight and get his car tomorrow and start fasting. Yeah.
Sunny went on a fast today, a 10-day fast. I'll just start joining her. Like, yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah,
I can't do that 10 days without any food, just juice. No,
she went on a 10-day fast.
She started it today. Yeah.
She's doing a purge.
Yeah,
everyone who does this says how phenomenal they feel at the end of it. I feel like they have to tell themselves that. Or
she always tells me she's like I have more energy, and actually a lot of days she does, but like because she's done this before, like once or twice, not the full 10 days. I think she did like 8 the last time because on the 8th day she was just like, okay, I have to eat food, but yeah.
All right, we should probably talk about some War Machine, though.
We did.
So we made it through Chromax Feet. Do we have some dojo for today?
I do.
Chad's always got dojo.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, you have to suffer through this dojo.
I'm taking off my headphones.
That's part of the bet. Make that part of the bet.
We're going to have a Chad-isode where it's like me and Keith will just take off and just be Chad talking about the state of trolls.
Yeah.
And then Josh is,
and you have to be engaged.
Yeah. Oh,
Josh,
my God.
Josh has to put his phone in a different room.
And this
like,
is like
totally,
the
yeah.
worst possible.
You can make whatever bet you want with Chad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Yeah, okay.
And John's taking his chances with the splash dancer.
John doesn't want any part of this.
Yeah, no, I don't want to listen to you either.
Can we make it splash dance? Can we spray them with hoses while they're dancing?
Well, it's a big water bucket, so they're gonna have a rope.
You're not talking about splash. You're talking
splash
about
splash
dance.
Yeah. It's going to be splash.
I feel like
dance.
That's the dirty version.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Anyway,
I cracked the Calandra code.
Nice.
Didn't everyone already crack it with the theme force?
No.
Is it?
No.
Chad, is it 11 lights or do you have the waters in there?
No, you shut up.
I'm ready for some really innovative troll dojo, okay. Chad.
I guess the way
is
that
it
I
Ruins
post-
of War or is it Elemental Elemental?
The way that I was posting about it on Twitter was I cracked the non-elemental immunion, whatever, the non-EE calamity.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Let's hear what innovative technology you have today.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Is there a creel stone and some warders, Chad?
That's only...
What else?
That's only what else?
Exactly.
Are there Nyss Hunters?
Yes.
Is there burrowers?
No.
Oh my!
I tried to get them in though, but they wouldn't fit.
Tell us more, Chad.
How about the double gun guys?
Yeah, they're in there too. Thanks, Josh.
Is Braylon the Wonderheart?
Yeah.
Is that pretty much the list?
That's pretty much the list.
Is there also the Harmonious Exaltation guy?
What are my beasts?
Troll Moses.
Josh?
Bomber Impaler.
How'd you know?
Oh my God! You cracked the troll code.
Cracked the code.
It's sweet on ADR.
I believe that.
I believe it.
I believe that.
Full list, you asshole.
That was worth it.
It was pretty much spot on. Rune Bearer, Impaler, Bomber, Braylon, Chronicler, Witch Doc. Full Creel Stone, Highwaymen, Nyss Hunters, Bone Grinders, one unit of Fire Eaters, and Swamp Gobbers.
No Warders.
The Specialists.
No Wonderheart.
Are two units Wonderheart. Of Warders.
Yep.
And a second unit of Fire Eaters.
Nice.
And I think I talked about this when we were originally talking about ADR, this new season of ADR. So it might have got scrapped since we had to throw that episode out.
Yeah.
But my first thought with Calandra, everyone else's first thought with Calandra on the ADR is always like, oh, I can put elemental aluminium, whatever, and I can, you know, switch up my beasts for the perfect scenario, like, which, you know, whatever, screw that. Like, that's uncreative. not like this list, which is pure creativity.
No, I agree. I missed four things that were in your 75-point list.
70-point.
Right, sorry. Yeah, 70-point.
Yeah, you asshole.
Wait, she's not a plus five?
She is a plus five.
Boom!
I guess 75.
I know trolls better than Chad.
Well, I didn't know. It was technically still 70 points.
Okay.
Yeah. Plus five Warby points.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, my original jump to for her was, I was like, well, you could pair up a bunch of high-def, low-arm models in the main list and just plan on going off of Starcrossed spam.
Yeah.
And then they have a lot of versatility, too, in both killing infantry and heavies with Befuddle. That's why the Bone Grinders are in there.
Yeah.
Make Befuddle a little bit easier to catch mm-hmm. heavies with.
Is it range 12?
It's range 12 with Bone Grinders. Turn those heavies around, shoot them with a Highwayman mm-hmm. so they get the 3 dice
yep.
damage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot of damage.
Yeah. 20,
especially on the feet turn.
20 boosted Pow-10s or whatever combination of CRAs right. you wish.
Yeah.
Plus the Nis Hunters are Weapon Masters, and the feat affects Nis Hunters as well. Or if I see that they have the counter tech to the high defense spam, because I mean the Nis Hunters are def 15, and the Warders or the Highwaymen will be def 16 with Chronicler.
Yeah.
So with Starcross, it's pretty tough to get to those guys. And then if I see that they have the answers for the Nis Hunters and the Highwaymen, then I can take that out, or at least take one of them out and put the Warders in, get the two units of Warders in, and now I have. Mm-hmm. This hard core that doesn't really care about, you know, it drastically transforms.
It's one SKU to another SKU.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And most lists can't cover both.
And Warders, that we've talked about this before, Warders are a pain in the ass with Starcrossed. Like, anything that makes Warders harder to hit.
What do you envision as your typical side out for the Warder side in?
That's the hardest part right now, and I'm actually was trying to...
Yeah, the math isn't clean.
It's not clean. So I probably end up getting rid of the Nis Hunters, the Gator Man... and then I would need to get rid of 3 points somewhere else. So it would probably be Bone Grinders and Swamp Gobbers or the Rune Bearer and the Swamp Gobbers. That would give me 16 points to get the Warders in. I would really, really like to get the second unit of Fire Eaters in too, mm-hmm. but it is tough to do that without... So I would need to drop the Highwaymen or... I can't get the second unit of Fire Eaters in right now.
Right.
The way that it's currently configured.
There may be situations where you need to get both the units out, so you might be dropping, like, Nis Hunters, Highwaymen, and...
The Chronicler.
And the Chronicler.
You can also potentially always drop the Bomber out of the list, depending on how match it.
Need the Fury.
I just...
Oh, yeah. Derp. Yeah. Of course you need the Fury. Yeah.
Maybe the Impaler. Maybe.
No. No.
I need the Fury, too, yeah.
I can't touch the Warbeast.
Yeah, fair enough.
The Warbeasts are actually the biggest weak point of this list. Normally, I like to run Calandra with a lot more Warbeasts, with at least two heavies, like at least two Bombers, one Impaler.
Or like 11 lights.
And that's what the way the list originally was set up. I had my Bomber, and I had a second Bomber in the sideboard, and I was going to be like, this Hunter's get out, second Bomber get in, you know, some other stuff. So there's definitely some, like, finagling there, but... It just when I my mind went back to the Warders because I'm a one trick pony, uncreative, stupid idiot apparently. And we talked about Warders with Calandra before.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's just with the ADR being able to choose whether to play them or not to play them.
Yeah,
because the list is drastically different depending on whether you have Highwayman Nis or two units.
Yeah,
Warders,
for
obviously.
Sure. Yeah,
but yeah, it would probably end up being what you just said, Keith. It would probably be Highwaymen out, Nis Hunters out, Chronicler out, two units of Warders in, one unit of Fire Eaters in. And then I have two Warders, two Fire Eaters, Bomber Impaler.
The only thing I don't like about that swap is that you are drastically reducing the amount of offensive output that your list is capable of with that switch.
I am. But I mean, that's the thing is, like, depending on the kinds of, like, I don't know how often I'll make this trade. And it might be the kind of thing that I won't know until I play it at a tournament.
Yeah.
Like, and I see the breadth of the kinds of diversity that you're facing against with it.
Yeah.
But I feel like most of the time that I am going to want to make that trade for those two units, it's going to be against something that the Warders are going to do a lot more work.
Sure.
Against.
Yeah.
Then I don't know. Maybe
I mean,
not.
It's an intriguing thing because obviously she is probably the best troll caster at. Playing that high defense spam. I think, right?
No, she is.
Yeah. And
like nothing else even comes close,
right.
Actually.
Yeah. And so the ability to play like a traditional troll list or a high defense spam, like I said, very few lists are capable of covering both of those things.
Yeah, it makes me really want to play ADR just to make sure that I don't get locked into something that I can't play. Although I guess, God, that becomes like a weird ADR chicken.
The thing that I like about it is I can't even think of a lot of ADR situations where people would swap out to like for something that could answer both of my swaps.
Right.
So I feel like most of the time I probably just straight no after the list selection.
Which one?
Like I say I'm playing Kalandra. They say they're playing whatever. And then I know exactly what my list is going to be after I see that. And I can't think of very many scenarios. And also ADR is very unpopular right now. For some reason, not very many people are playing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily expect that to continue, but maybe it will.
I'm very curious to see. Yeah, I mean, more and more people are talking about it, but like I was crazy about it from the get-go, and like almost nobody did it at Adepticon. I'm very curious to see how many people are doing it at Lock and Load. It adds another layer to the game.
What I like is that people are taking it upon themselves, like tournament organizers are just starting to say, like, they're just tagging the Masters format onto everything now. So, because it's like... people are catching on. Like, that's the other problem is it wasn't, like, if it wasn't a Masters, if it was just a standard steamroller, then it might not be. But now that it's going to be more of an opportunity to use it, it's super powerful. It's really good.
It's just incredible, like, how often you think about a list with ADR, and you're just like, the old problem of, okay, this is how I build the list because this is the optimal version of this list, but then this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. And, like, now, like, with 20 points of sideboard, you can pretty much set it up so that you feel relatively comfortable dropping any list into almost any given situation.
I think I talked about it a little bit online, and I don't want to repeat too much of what I typed, but the magic is like...
Let's just read it word for word.
No, just it brings units that are sort of like really specialized off the dustbin.
Yeah.
Because like, I always just take Winterguard Death Star because they're good against everything.
Right.
And then I just want to buff them with as much buffers as possible. And so when ADR first came out, I was just like, I just don't want a sideboard of all these like different buff pieces, like, and I'm still using the same components.
Yeah.
But then I can really pin my ears back and like, well, let's just get rid of them. Let's go switch between Kaiazi and Rifle Corps, and I'm like windmill slamming matchups.
Yeah.
Like it's super huge. It's really it takes the need for those support pieces completely out of your list. You don't need Ion and Holt so much if you have Doom Reavers, you know, who I think are really specialized. Like I think they're kind of garbage in almost every matchup. But
right.
But the Krix one.
But the
they're really good in that one.
Windmill slam time, you know, and then,
like Runes of War or like random weird matchups.
Yeah. You
know. No, because I guess that was how I first thought about it for Mercs, too. As I was like, oh, I can have all these specialized solos for whatever special occasion. And it's actually just more like I came to the conclusion with Ostrom. I'm like, I either want like a second Galleon or I just want two units of Forge Guard that I almost never play.
Yeah.
But every now and then. They are what I want. You know,
yeah, so. I think that's the lesson with ADR, though, is that there's a lot of ways to apply it, and we're just scratching the surface now.
Yeah.
You know, like when
the early adopters are figuring things out pretty quickly too, like or at least faster than just go on. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say when I read that from Nigel, I was like, actually, that's really brilliant, being able to take pieces that are traditionally only very specialized, so you get to take something that's more powerful in a matchup.
Yeah.
And maybe less powerful in others, but you just side it out if it's not good in a certain matchup.
Like you're looking at our favorite thing, a double Colossal list, and you're like, normally, I do not want this anywhere near Epic Lilith. It's an enormous disaster. She just eats one.
Yeah.
And half the other one before I get there. And it's a really bad time. And you're like, but in my sideboard is Ralic Moorclaw and three Vanguards. And like, now it's a different story.
Guest on Cross, you mean?
Or Guest on Cross and three Vanguards. Oh, yeah, because Ralic can only have two.
Two, yeah.
Yeah.
But the two is enough to change the math. It's all like if you're talking conquest, it's enough to throw it out. But
and maybe another unit of mechanics or something silly. You know, who knows? But
well, the other thing too is that it polishes caster turds. So like, Zarkova is quite good if against like 20% of like a meta that it just doesn't even exist. Actually, like you won't likely run into it. But if your list can adjust 20 points in these huge blocks, all of a sudden she's like more interesting. Or same thing with the Harkovich or whoever. Like it really polishes the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, so like things that I've been finding that I can do with my Ron list, for example, is I'm very magic focused, But somebody will assume that I'm not going to drop Ron into them, but I can switch into a more ranged focus list and then use the...
Ron's
the,
just an embarrassment of riches.
Well, I mean, that's true. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
That's just ridiculous.
I'm pretty happy with my two list right now. It's it's very good, and I'm very sad that I'm not going to get to play either of them in ADR from now on. So, but
from next week on.
I'm going to play them. I'm definitely going to play them at Lock and Load and probably Daikon.
Yeah, I guess we kind of started talking about ADR, like, and I've been thinking about this list more in terms of the way that it interacts with ADR. But I guess the more important question is, I guess, just whether or not the base list is good enough.
I mean,
I haven't seen anyone. Highwaymen with Kalandra are one of the first things that people thought of when that unit came out.
We haven't necessarily seen anybody play it.
Probably. I haven't seen anybody doing it yet because that Theme Force has just blown up. Yeah. And I also haven't seen very many people playing with Highwaymen, period. Like, I'm the only one that I've seen that's really been trying it out a lot.
Yeah,
I played against them once, and I Crippling Grasp and shot them all to death with this.
I've been really enjoying them more I've played them.
They're good. They're really good.
They're more versatile than I think people think they are.
Incredibly versatile.
They...
Like 20 CRA shots is just...
Yeah, with some aiming and like Swift Hunter 2. Yeah. Swift Hunter randomly gets you cool, you know, they can Swift Hunter into the back arc, into someone's back arc, for instance, and then all of a sudden three dice. And I've just been really enjoying it a lot. And then also Braylon, like, has this weird effects too where, like, I'll have her charging models because she'll often be, like, operating off of on the side in weird places because she can run and gun.
They're like
and then I'll have her charging models that she's in the front arc, but she'll charge to their back arc, and then she's three dice POW 12s.
Yeah.
Which is really...
They're like a really flexible unit of long gunners, which is always the problem with long gunners. Right. Like, well, we got to stand still and aim, but like...
Also more survivable.
That's what I was going to say. Like, whenever they're on the table, I find myself prioritizing killing them and feeling it more when they make tough checks, which tells me that they're very good.
Right.
So, because, like, if I look and I just look at the output, like, what they're going to do to me on the next turn, I'm often like, yep, those got to die. Like, they have to go. Because if I leave them, they're going to kill too much stuff. Like, they hit way above their point class. Because they have a good threat range. I mean, they're...
14-inch.
Yeah. And they just kill stuff.
Is Gunbjorn on this set?
Yes.
Okay. The current one, right?
Current, yes. Yeah, I've thought about them with him, too. I've actually played them with him, and them with Snipe is insane.
I can imagine.
Like, I think two units of them with him cycling Snipe, like, I don't really even care what the rest of your list is. Like, that unit with Snipe is really, really good.
Yeah.
It's super good. I mean just imagine having a unit that's got 10 Rat 7 POW 12, Rat 7 hand cannons.
Pretty good.
Like, if you had a unit that was just a 10-man unit, that all had Rat 7 hand cannons.
I would take that.
Yeah, right?
I would play that.
If it was an 8-point unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's really good.
Like, then also, they also have CRA.
And they also have CR.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and then occasionally, like, you get into situations where people saturate a field, and then you've got 20 Rat 7 POW 10s, like, or whatever.
Yeah.
So I only did that one game, and I was getting phenomenally bad dice, and I was still, like, able to, you know, come up. And then also randomly, too, like, he'd put, like, a Warp Wolf or a Gorax. Like, I was playing against a Circle player. He put, like, a Gorax in front of one of the units, and I was just like, 2 POW 20s, killed it.
Yeah.
Which, like, that's good dice, but that's actually not even good dice. It's just average, I guess.
2 POW 20s?
2 POW 20s is, like, dice, 11 damage each. 22 is how much a Gorax has.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Seems good.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. Like, it's very frustrating. Actually, what frustrates me very much when I've played against them, particularly with Grimm, because they're extremely deadly with Grimm, too, is you always play that stupid Chronicler. So if I do manage to shoot one, it's like Def 14. I shoot it. It dies.
Def 16.
Yeah, it's Def 16 with a Chronicler.
That's right. Sorry. Def 16. Yeah. I shoot it. It dies. It makes a tough check, and then it's feigned death.
Yeah,
and I'm just like,
So anyway, I don't know. I hope that this list is... I should probably just play this base list for a while and see if it's any...
I mean, the base list is very... similar to a lot of Clander lists you've played.
I used to play a long time ago.
Which was were fine lists, and it feels like the Fire Eaters and the
Highwaymen
are only upgrades for the lists.
Right.
It's basically where it's at right now is sub burrowers for Highwaymen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From
I wish
an
the
old school Clander
burrowers
list.
Were in the list still. I really, because it's only
also
like
less
points and
War Beast
so
output. Because I used to have two bombers.
Yeah.
Also, because I would have nailed it.
There is a way to get the burrowers in, but we'd have to look at the list without the Northkin Fire Eaters, basically. Because you strip them all out, and then, because that's the 8 points, which is most of the way there to getting your 6 points of Burrowers and your 3 points of Fellcaller. And then you have the option. I don't know exactly how they fit in with the swaps, because the points are currently split. But it's possible.
Yeah.
And we can always strip down more of this, which probably, when the Burrowers are in, the Creelstone is out, is probably how it goes.
Right.
So you could play... That's actually a thought. I mean, I know the Fire Eaters are amazing, and having them in the sideboard
is there
an option to play them.
Well, originally I had a minimum Creelstone, and you were yelling at me for that. And I kind of agree with you, but without, if I just do the minimum Creelstone, then I can actually just swap the... I can have 2 units of Fire Eaters in the main list, and then the Creelstone stays with the Warders.
But the Warder plan isn't as good.
It's not quite as good. Usually, it's not even the... Because Keith and I were talking about this. The Creelstone's weird. It's usually not even... Sorry. It's usually not even the bubble aura that matters. It's just sort of the bodies. And when you have two less bodies... Because the aura often sits at around, like, 8 to 9 anyway. Mm-hmm. And it maxes out at 9 with a minimum unit.
Okay.
And Calandra can just... easily fill it up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, sure.
And but, when you've got...
So it, the aura range is
the same.
It's not the same. It's still smaller because you can get it up to 10 and 11. It's just, it doesn't always happen. So it usually ends up being roughly the same. It's just that sort of mental factor on your opponent where they will a lot of the times look down at the table and be like, oh, there's only 5 of those guys. Like, I can kill a couple of them.
Yeah.
And then each one that dies, whereas... Oftentimes, if it's sitting at 8 or 9 and then there's 7 dudes there, they have to kill 3 dudes.
To make any kind of difference whatsoever, yeah.
Before they even start.
So they don't bother.
Right.
So a minimum Creelstone is like 3 times as vulnerable as a maximum Creelstone, despite the difference of.
Yeah.
Here's another thought, and it's just a thought exercise, but could you downgrade the battle group and get Burrowers in? So, for example, you could like switch out Bomber Impaler and put in like.
Slag Impaler?
No, I was thinking actually a completely different. You could put in like Swamp Troll and the Shield Guard, the one with the bombs.
The Bouncer.
And so you get your Fury Generation. They're guys that stay in the back and they add more defensive capabilities to Calandra and give you some more. But you're putting in Burrowers who are as much offensive output, I would say, as the Bomber and the Impaler in a different sort of way. But it also makes Calandra safer. So. It's just a thought.
And yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I was talking to Tom Guan about it, and he was like, you should put Swamp Trolls in his wise Tom Guan way.
Mm.
And I was thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't hate Swamp Trolls with her. Like, they're not great but on their own. But with Starcrossed and Swarm, and I can, like, intersperse them within, like, the Warders or the Nis Hunters or whatever to kind of give them effectively +2 defense, you know, and rerolling crits and, you know, whatever. They're not terrible with Calandra.
No.
I don't hate it.
Randomly eating a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, it's not for offense because you're putting the Burrowers in to make up for the offense. And then you're also putting in more defense. So like you're doing both at the same time. And, you know, the Bomber is often pretty vulnerable because it goes up to throw bombs.
Right.
Where
I was actually just thinking about this now, but I was probably going to end up putting Bullet Dodger on the Bomber most games.
Yeah.
Just to make it Death 14. Move around. Mm-hmm. But that'd be kind of annoying.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. I was just thinking outside the box a little bit. But
yeah. Because that's my biggest concern when I was looking at this list was just that 2012 me would have hated it because there's no Janissa. And I actually don't have Janissa in either of my... Oh, no, that's not true. She'd be with Madrak. Sorry. No, she'd be with Madrak.
Okay.
Crisis averted.
Thank God.
Accidentally didn't take Gorman.
I was going to ask.
But... Calandra would be the main sort of weakness of just her dying if she doesn't really have a lot of stuff to hide behind. Because mostly, you know, you can't hide behind Nis Hunters if you're a troll. And just one heavy and I don't know. But that's why kind of the Swamp Covers are in there. So
I feel like with a Bomber and the Swamp Covers, you can make a bunker for her often than not.
Yeah.
Well, the Swamp Covers make a big enough bubble, too, where the bunker is pretty good early anyway. So... And hopefully you can neutralize enough of the threats where it gets safer for her. Like, she can camp through some things.
I really like it. And it's not a theme for, so I like it more.
Yeah.
Ta-da!
All right. That's all I had.
So,
I was getting pretty excited building it. I was just like, oh, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, Josh got pretty excited building it, too.
Yeah, he did. Josh, have you ever thought about playing trolls?
Yep. I vomit uncontrollably every time.
I enjoyed the list that Crump played tonight. I was like, yeah, that's exactly probably very similar to a list that I would play.
The P. Lilith list.
The P. Lilith list. With,
you're going to dojo Crump's P. Lilith?
Yeah, because he, like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, go for it.
I mean, I just liked it because it had my favorite thing in Legion, which is Incubi, that nobody plays.
I hate Incubi so much. Yeah, they're nobody, so good.
They are so good. So, like, in the, we were watching a game, and Josh was playing Magnus II with Killbox up, which is apparently an aura. So Crump had to place all of the... He placed, like, seven Incubi.
Six Incubi and base-to-base with a Galleon.
Yeah, six that couldn't charge because they couldn't move towards the Galleon because of Killbox. So they couldn't charge, so Crump's just like, well, I guess we'll just harm it with the Black Frost Shard, hit it with Parasite, and then these POW 19 Incubi just, like, almost killed it.
They did kill it.
Yeah.
Well, the Black Frost Shard also did, like, 8 damage with just Frost Bolts or whatever.
Yeah. That's good dice. Yeah.
And then...
like, 8 or 10 more from 2 Hex Bolts.
No, the Hex Hunters rolled, like, Snake Eyes on 1 damage roll and 3 on another damage roll.
Yeah,
but
like
they should have done another, like, 15 or something like that. Because it's dice off 2 for them. Or no,
it's
dice off 1 for them.
So they should do 12.
Yeah, sorry. It's still a lot.
Yeah.
They only ended up doing 3 from them. And then, yeah, the Hex Hunters, or the Incubi. And he was even not doing the correct math with the Incubi. He was just doing combo strikes with all of them, whereas...
he'd actually reached the point where single attacks do more damage.
Yeah.
Which is kind of insane. Doesn't often happen.
I mean,
it's a +5 armor swing.
+5 swing is...
is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, that's just all there is to it.
Yeah, it's nonsensical.
But there's other things that are in the list, and we mentioned the Hex Hunters. You know, their bolts get up to POW 18, which is... pretty darn good.
And the Hex Hunters just operate so powerfully under, and I never even actually drew the comparison before, but Nick immediately said, like, oh, they're basically just...
Legion Blood Trackers.
They're just Blood Trackers, but kind of better, because they've got...
they can't be engaged out of quick working?
Yeah, they're mat 7 all the time. They can quick... they do their version of quick work, Battle Wizard, in melee, so no problems there, in or out. And they're mat 7, POW 10, or magic 6, POW 13 all the time. So they're kind of in between prey and not prey blood trackers. But since prey is very a fickle rule, it's kind of better to be not quite as good, but not quite as bad as they are without prey.
Yep.
And then on her feet, they just go gangbusters because they charge in and mat 7... boosted is pretty close to auto hitting, and then they're boosted 6s on the way out, so they do tons and tons of work.
Yeah, also Incubi are very dangerous to your caster.
Yep.
With Lilith, because with boost to hit, they're mat 7, you know, they can put a lot of attacks on casters at a pretty high POW, even if you don't get Parasite or something on them to enable them. Like, they hit hard enough.
So the list is P. Lilith with 2 Bolt Throwers, full unit of Hex Hunters with Bale, unit of Swordsman
with Abbott and Champion.
Full pot, I think.
Yep.
And 2 Deathstalkers.
And 10 Incubi.
And then 10 Incubi.
And 10 Incubi, yep.
Yeah, and he said that he wasn't even sure about the Swordsmen. He's thinking about changing them out, swapping them out. Which, I don't know, I could see it going either way.
I've seen him play a list similar with Legionnaires at one point, but then he had Ravagors instead of... like, he'd upgraded the Bolt Throwers to Ravagors and didn't have the Incubi.
I kind of like the Legos because they're really good at, like... sort of holding ground for you.
Yeah, I like the Legionnaires a lot in that list. I've seen him play it with double Hex Hunters. I've seen him dink around with Blight Blades, which are also an interesting option.
Well, I've played against 2 variants of the list that effectively it's the core. It's just the swordsman change between the two. But
well, the biggest change he made recently was I kept yelling at him to put Incubi in the list, and he wouldn't do it.
He's had Incubi both times we played.
Yeah,
which has been for like the last 4 weeks or so. But, the Incubi are obnoxious. The weakness of the list is actually Lilith herself.
Yeah, she can die.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does. She has so many. It's very like Nick in that she's similar to Cassius in that the effect that she can apply to the field is so powerful, more so than most other Legion Warlocks can do on a turn-to-turn basis. But she falls over often.
Particularly given that... in the list, she's like one of the few things that you often are able to target or shoot at, since the Hex Hunters are stealth. Black Frost Shard is in the list, obviously. Black Frost Shard is stealth. And then the pots in the back So, yeah.
Swordsman and Lilith kind of just hanging out. The ADR, because she's an ADR caster currently, an option that I was talking to Nick about, I don't know where he's at with it right now, is the option to switch between the Blight Blade, the backfield Blight Blade jam and not, because that, I think, is a really powerful... It's something that people don't see coming that can happen to them and completely... It can just end a game real fast. Because you put these 12 defense 15 models behind your army, you're like, oh, I kind of have to deal with them because they're not nothing in combat.
No, they have two attacks, so I mean...
Do they have CMA?
I don't know. I think they maybe do.
I doubt it. I can't imagine a unit like that having CMA.
I don't think they do, but I'll check.
And crit grievous wounds, which interacts well with Lilith's feet. And then if you start killing them, they turn into incubi in your backfield.
Which is a disaster.
It's pretty bad. So you're kind of it's a catch-22. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
They do have CMA.
Wow. They're pretty good.
Yeah, so they're very dangerous, and it's particularly in the backfield because there's a lot of squishy stuff back there usually that's worth getting to.
Yep.
And
so the ability to switch between that and not, like to have the second unit up front if you're like, there's biothralls in this list, better not bother. Or it's all electrical immunity and there's a Thunderhead rolling around, like something that can trivially end the Blightblade threat, which is not very many things.
Right.
Yeah, but even if a T-Head pulses on him and kills six Blightblades, then it gets charged by six Incubi and dies. It's not even a bad trade, really.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to think of what situation actually is bad for that. Like,
I mean, it's actually a good way to get rid of all the stupid Biothralls, too. Because you're like, I'm giving away a lot of points. But getting rid of, like, against Lich, you're getting rid of all the Biothralls, because they can't really get away from the Incubi. It'd be pretty hard.
Clouds, but... Yeah. Because, the Incubi can't go through clouds.
It's like all the situations where you're actually getting stuff from them. So against Lich, it's bad because then he's like, oh, sweet, focus. You know, souls, that kind of thing.
Maybe under like a time walk feat that somebody who would kill them and then somehow time walk the incubi, so basically Haley too, or bust, since you can't spawn out of her feat. But the incubi also do ignore a lot of feats.
That's what I like about them. I still remember the time you and I played, Keith, where... I was playing Rias, and like six Incubi killed like 18 pirates or something stupid.
Yeah, under one of the Denny pirates when I was like, feed on your whole army, and then spawned a crap ton of Incubi.
Very angry.
Incubi are so good.
Mm-hmm. I think they're one of the most underrated units in, or I guess they're solos actually, but underrated items in Legion. They're just not used that much.
Mm-hmm. It's just they don't work with beasts, and that's what people usually play with Legion. If you're playing infantry-heavy Legion, which is what Nick is doing, then Incubi are ridiculous. I'm glad he's doing it, too.
It's another thing about that list, which is potent, is that people see a Legion opponent, and they have a lot of expectations that the cult of JVM has created a template that we all... tech off the boxes, like, can I beat Legions? Like, can I hit a defense 14 war beast and kill it? Can the blah, 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 blah. Like, can I deal with X many heavies? And then you're like, 30 infantry. This is different than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been pretty awesome watching Nick play Legion.
Yeah, the favorite thing that I've heard that he did is he played two units of ambushers with Incubi with Veil 1, and he feated on one. So he ran them off the edges, and then they all advanced seven from the feet and engaged Colin's entire army.
Yeah, Colin was pretty unhappy about that.
Yeah.
And even if they're not gonna kill everything the following turn, it still cripples you with you just don't know what the hell to do because that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, also, like, he's spending time, like, killing these guys that is now spawning Incubi.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think Colin still ended up killing, like, 8 or 9 of them or something like that. But then they all turned into Incubi, and they just killed all of his gun mages, and then he just quit.
Nick has done a lot of really creative things, though. That and the Refuging Baal was pretty cool with Veil 2. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gross.
Yeah. Shadowbind that. Walk away. Ta-da.
Interesting. I like it. I think ADR is it's cool. This, like, P. Lilith and Thagrosh 1 are a good one, too. Next season, I'm actually excited for them as well, because Kallus, a caster I like a fair deal, plays a cool... He can play the infantry game. Probably not as well as P. Lilith does, but he himself is much more durable than she is. Mm-hmm. So you trade away, like, Ignite, not as good as Parasite, but very good.
He also just... But Darkseid's her feet every single turn if he wants to.
Right, right. Yeah. But not from range.
Only from melee. Yeah.
That's true.
So there are trade-offs.
There are.
Because that's been one thing. His Lilith game often will just sort of devolve into caster kill, but it's a pretty good caster kill because he parasites you, and then the Black Frost Shard get boosted frost ice cages.
Ice cages, yeah.
And that's pretty sick.
Yep.
But... then there are three great options for running Beast Heavy alongside that Kallus list to create a tough pair. And then ADR to fix problems along the way. It's Absalonia 2.
That would be my choice.
Thagrosh 2. And Lilith 3. She's been getting some more play recently. Brian Marina did very well with her at... was that the Seattle?
Seattle Open, yeah.
And just talking about... something I never thought of, which was
Zeriel's
Animus, where she just turns into like three dead. She just turns into like six dead infantry a turn. That's what I do. Like, no problems. Because I'm boosted on all of them. She's got auto fire 3 with ROF 2.
Oh, yeah.
She goes blip, blip.
Yep. And then all boosted to hit, and she's like Rat 7, and you had ride bys, and just. Like, that's a lot of attrition to get from your caster every turn.
Mm hmm. And you can hold off the feet until the heavy things start to move up, and then she feats, and the heavy things are stuck in, like just like six shadow binds, or not shadow binds, death chills.
Death chills, but still a powerful effect to be sure.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So I think next season is also pretty interesting for Legion.
Yep. As soon as Ryze gets on that list, I'm playing.
Yeah,
I'll move back to Legion.
You're waiting. You're like me. You're waiting for
so
your
next
caster.
Year.
Yeah, next year. Yeah, I love playing Ryze. I just like playing her. She's a lot of fun. She's just a fun caster to play. And I think with ADR, she actually might be pretty good.
So next time, we should have some reports from Lock and Load. I'm planning to play some ADR in the Masters at Lock and Load.
We're going to have a ton to talk about next time, because we're going to probably have con spoiler. Like, maybe one of the books will be there.
I'm thinking Reckoning will be there.
We'll probably have spoilers and such from all the other stuff, and then we'll have all our battle reports. Yeah, it's going to be nuts.
It's going to be nuts. It's going to be a long podcast.
Yay!
I mean,
we can just cut the pre-ramble out, and it'll be the same length.
Yeah,
that's true. Actually,
our
pre-rambles have been ridiculous lately.
Yeah, they've been fun though. Oh yeah, spoiler alert! Our pre-ramble is full of spoilers for all kinds of things. So,
Game of Thrones primarily.
No, we talked about Name of the Wind, Game of Thrones.
I mean, Name of the Wind's old enough. Spoilers aren't really.
I suppose Fury Road.
Are really any spoilers about Fury Road?
Probably not.
No,
you were yelling at me in the pre-ramble.
Oh, yeah, I did.
There was something we were talking that was spoiler-ish.
Yeah. It was season Fury 5 Road. Of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, season 5 of Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep, so if all of that stuff like makes you upset or it bores you, like don't listen to the pre-ramble. FYI. Store update, Flat Terrain has been shipped. Should be on sale next Monday.
Oh, yeah. Forest will go up first, then like the next day Trenches, or something along those lines.
Awesome. I love the flat terrain. I want everything to be flat.
Yep.
Not touching that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially hills. Hills are the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't done yet, but they're coming.
The most important thing, and they're not done yet.
What? Forests are the most important thing.
Why are Colossals not infinitely tall, talking about hills? Because they're
an elevated model behind a Colossal is perfectly visible.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Just like standing on the edge of some massive cliff. Just like on the cliffs of Dover with Galleon below him.
Yeah.
It's like,
but then he can charge.
But then he can just totally charge off that cliff. No problem.
It's a sloping hill.
Yeah, a sloping cliff.
It's just like 6 miles long.
Yeah. Look, sometimes the rules don't always make sense.
It is both infinitely long and infinitely short.
That's how I describe my...
yeah?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you for tuning in to another fun episode of Muse on Minis. This has been John.
Chad.
Keith.
and Josh.
Nigel.
I want to move to Madison.
You should.
Yeah.
It's sweet there.
Except for the people. It's great.
Yeah.
And the city.
And the city.
And really pretty much state. Everything about it.
And the governor.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Enjoy that guy.
Enjoy never getting a monorail.
Yeah, I'm kind of salty about that.
Mm-hmm. That would have been so hacks. Minneapolis to Chicago. Ugh.
Wait, they're going to do a monorail from Minneapolis to Chicago?
A high speed one.
Yeah, the Fed pretty much wanted to pay for all of it. They're like, these are cities that should be connected, like Madison or Minneapolis to Madison to Chicago. Like that makes sense. These cities should be connected by easy public transportation.
It was going
to
be like a high speed kind of experiment, like they're starting that infrastructure.
Yeah.
And literally, Minnesota and Illinois were like totally on board, and then Scott Walker's like, we're not taking federal money, that's taxpayer, you know, like he just got idiotic, he like went full on Tea Party, and then like
it
blew up the thing, like he was the link of the chain, and they're like, okay, well we'll build somewhere else. We're like,
I feel like we could do Minneapolis to Des Moines to Chicago.
It was a big part of why they tried to impeach him, basically. They tried to kick him out.
Yeah.
Almost. Well, that was a huge part of it, because he's a freaking idiot.
They recalled successfully and then ran out of gas and couldn't.
Oh, I know.
He got re-elected.
Freaking liberals are like the worst. It's so lazy.
It's like, we're bored.
Yeah, it's like it takes so much energy to go to like Whole Foods. There's just nothing left to do. be fucking responsible afterwards. I had to ride my recumbent bike to Whole Foods. Who's going to fucking have time for voting?
Nice.
Ugh.
So what movies did you talk about last week?
Mad Max and Avengers.
Still?
Fury Road.
Well, because everybody's like trickling in on Fury Road. Like who hasn't seen Fury Road?
This guy.
Okay, see? So it's like it's just trickling. And
Josh,
then Josh will see it. We'll talk about it one more time. And then
I can say that I've seen it 3 times and it holds up very well.
It's good.
Furious 7 did not hold up to the 3rd rewatch, unfortunately.
You went to see it 3 times. I have seen it once.
Yeah.
It was excellent.
I see a lot of movies I'll see them with my boys, and then I'll see them with my friends. And then...
Who some people also describe as their boys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My boys. My
true. Boys. That's how I describe you guys. Like, I'm going to go hang with the boys.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I do, actually. Sometimes it's okay. The guys, but usually the boys.
The lads.
You mean chaps. The men, right?
Me and the mates going to go down to the pub for a pint.
Kenny Loggins had the right of it.
We literally drove to Des Moines just to hang out with you on Monday night.
That happened.
Because we felt bad that you weren't there at our sweet barbecue.
I appreciated it. I felt loved.
Yeah. You should have.
I did.
You are loved. Yay. Weirdly. I'm like a battered wife.
Yeah.
100%. Actually, probably can't, in good conscience, make that comparison.
Well, it's not factual.
Though. Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you mean like literally battered, like tempura.
Yeah.
Then, it's super.
Self basting.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. What are we talking about this week?
Double Colossals.
Again? Didn't you do Double Colossals last week, or is that specifically like Nigel talking about
the Double?
We talked about him last week. Let's just repeat last week's cast.
Our Double Colossal's a problem. Will the meta survive?
Find out next week on Muse on Minis.
We, Brennan and I started watching the Battlestar Galactica miniseries. The beginning episodes where they, like, the Cylons attack and.
Oh, sure.
Is that a miniseries?
I guess. Yeah, because it came out in between, like, seasons 2 and 3 or something.
No. It came out before season 1. Originally, it was a miniseries. And it was like two-hour episodes, basically, that compromised the whole start of the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And then they started a series after that. Hmm. So we were watching basically the beginning episodes, I guess.
Is it all the same actors and everything, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've seen all of Battlestar Galactica. I probably have seen it.
I was just going to point out that Brendan's normally right with me on that kind of stuff, and he was just like, this is kind of boring, Dad.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke. So he's into something else now?
Yeah.
Apparently I didn't even make that.
I mean, I can understand that. It's pretty slow.
It is pretty slow, yep.
Like, for a child his age. Mm.
Have any of you guys seen The Babadook?
No, I didn't need to watch it.
There's been like 3 opportunities for me to watch it recently.
What's a Babadook?
It's a movie. It's an Australian movie.
About a woman that just abuses her child emotionally and physically.
Yep.
That's my understanding as well.
Sounds terrible.
No, it's actually, you're kind of rooting for her. You're like, get him!
Because the child is so miserably obnoxious.
Yeah.
Because Australian.
It's Australian, yeah. It's just, yeah. It's like that little kid from, Mad Max, like the feral kid who throws the boomerang, basically for like 40 minutes. And you're just like, get that kid out of here.
Which Mad Max?
So what's the point of this movie?
The Road Warrior. The little feral kid who throws the boomerang and chops the little fingers, guys.
Yeah.
And he's just like, the whole movie.
Yeah.
That kid.
Was it one of you saying that you thought that guy was Mad Max and the...
Yeah, it's a theory.
It's a theory that's going around.
Yeah.
Yep.
There are a lot of bizarre fan theories going on.
Well, the weird thing is there's like some crazy, I don't know, like there's a scene in the new movie where they have the music box that he gave the little kid. Like one of the wives is... It's the same music box, I'm pretty sure, or very similar.
The George Miller has been very smart in making these movies, in that he's created a very captivating setting without bothering to explain it ever.
Yeah.
And the fact that it is unexplained keeps people more interested than if it was explained.
Well, also, George Miller himself contributed, because people have kind of complained that... What's-his-face? Tom Hardy is no Mel Gibson.
No, he's far, far better.
He's like, you're right, he's not. We didn't cast him. Like, it's not the same guy.
He is not far better than Mel Gibson.
He was handed the jacket, and this is, like, a different guy. Yeah. Like, he just thinks, like, Mad Max is, like, a moniker, like, the Dread Pirate Roberts, and, like, it gets handed off.
Well, and then, like, Mad Max in the beginning of the movie, like, basically communicates with grunts through most of the first half of the movie.
Yeah, like, the way he's behaving is super, like, that kid.
Yeah.
You missed our Tom Hardy breakdown last week. Most of us came down on the side of Tom Hardy as an exceptionally overrated actor.
Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much anything's better than Mel Gibson.
No, Mel Gibson's actually...
Mel Gibson has turned in some pretty sweet roles.
Yeah, he's a pretty solid... I mean, you have to separate him from, like, the last 10 years where he turned bat crazy.
I mean, even, like, really bad movies like Payback, like, he plays, like, a pretty, like... a character that you should hate, but you actually kind of like it because he does. Like, Mel Gibson has turned in some good roles. Like, yeah, he got crazy and anti-Semitic, and that's unfortunate, but that doesn't mean that he wasn't awesome as Braveheart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. William Wallace, but...
Meh.
I'm actually trying to think of a role that he just sucked in. It's actually pretty hard to come by. Like, even that stupid Get the Gringo or whatever.
I haven't seen that. But
I'm just not sure I buy the argument that Tom Brady did a bad job because all he did was grunt for the first half of Mad Max. Because if you think, whatever.
Tom Brady did an amazing job.
Tom Brady has always done a bad job.
Yeah, you're right. So if you think about what he actually did, if you think about what he was going through throughout that movie, right? Like, he's getting his blood drained from him. He's strapped to the front of a car.
Mm.
He survives, like, a sandstorm, like, driving through a sandstorm.
Oh, my God. Spoilers.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
Okay. And then the car crashes and explodes or whatever, and he, like, is stranded in the desert. Like, he's not going to get up and be like, hey, guys, what's going on? Like, he's like, yeah. Yeah. And he sees, like, and then he walks, like, a couple of feet and sees a bunch of people, like, splashing around in water that they're, like, shooting out of their, you know, tank,
uh-huh.
their big tanker truck.
Uh-huh.
And he's just, like, like, reaching for the water, uh-huh. you know? Like, uh-huh. it's like, that's, I don't know, that's pretty realistic.
Yeah.
He's not going to be, like, screaming at them.
Can I have some water, please?
Please, sir.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying.
Mm.
I actually liked him a little better the third time.
The second watch, I definitely didn't mind him as much.
Yeah.
But he's still, he's like flat. He's not.
He's
like,
milk toast.
Yeah.
One his voice is very off putting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that is the weird thing about it to me.
It is super unfortunate, his voice.
You like look at him and you're like, And then yeah. he opens his mouth and you're like, ugh.
He does a good job for the first half of the movie, like when he's grunting. And then he actually does talk, like when he's just like, oh, I got to get this thing off my head. And he's just kind of talking like a normal dude. But then by the end, when he's like, we'll have to get the IV or whatever, and then we'll have to, you know, he's like, he's just full on Bane. It's like, God damn it. Stop talking, dude.
Yeah.
Never bothered me that much.
Yeah. But you love Ponzi, like, snobby sounding guys.
That's true, you do.
It's your wheelhouse.
It is basically.
I think he was trying to sound Australian, not Ponzi and snobby.
Any of you guys watching Game of Thrones?
Yeah. I haven't been.
The last one I saw was the episode that ended very alarmingly.
Oh. Well, actually, the most recent episode is the first one that I would consider to be pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Apparently they do something to Cersei, but I don't know what. So.
Well, that stuff happens in the books. So.
Oh. Several people were just like, Cersei finally got what she should have gotten in the books. So yep. I assume
no, she got that in the books.
Then they didn't read far enough in the books.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
I heard that they keep going back to the rape well for some reason.
That's George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, that's not...
That's George R. R. Martin. I stopped reading his books for that reason. And I loved the shows because they edited so much of it out. Like, every time there was an Arya chapter in the books, my skin effing crawled. I hated it.
They edited rapes into the show that weren't in the books.
Well,
only one. That's the...
Two. Yeah. Twice. It was the one when Daenerys and Khal Drogo, like, get married. Like, in the book, that was not a rape. In the show, it was very clearly a rape.
I think it's just that's how it's... Because in the book, it was very uncomfortable. She was, like, super
was
scared, and she was not having it.
Yeah, it was uncomfortable, but it wasn't...
I didn't remember thinking it was a rape in the show.
It was... Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's, like, crying.
Yeah, but she's also, like, emotionally upset, like, in the book. Like,
yeah.
I... Like,
it's
she's
different in the book.
Because he wins her over in the show the same way, right? He's like, he basically is like, you have to just choose or whatever. Like, he kind of gives her enough power where she feels like, she's like, okay, I can go forward with this, whatever. Like, it still sucks. It's super uncomfortable in George Martin-y, but.
I'd have to watch it again. Like, I totally believe you that I just know, like, when I watched it, I didn't think of it as rape.
The Sansa.
I don't remember it. I remember specifically talking about it afterwards.
Yeah.
And I remember even specifically talking about it to John afterwards
because
we were here and someone was like, yeah, that was a really weird scene. And both John and I were like, it's not that way in the books.
Yeah.
Like, okay. In the books, it is a lot less, like, straightforward, you know.
Well, in the books, she was a stronger character in that scene, I think.
Well, she...
Because she's basically like...
She had agency, basically, in the scene in the book.
Yeah.
Because they made it seem like he was basically, like, waiting for her to be okay with it.
Right.
To basically consent.
Well, that's, I mean...
And then in the show, like, he's just, like, going for it.
Yeah, that's part of the difference between how the book is written and the way that a show
has to be,
right?
Portrayed.
Because, like, the book is written, like, she's thinking, like, oh, and look, he's thinking this, or, like, he's doing this, I think he's doing this,
But my counterpoint is that the show then needs to be adapted better.
Yeah, it's very possibly true.
The other scene was when Which is like,
yeah, that was. I mean, the show directors even said that they didn't intend for it to come out the way it did, and that they effed it up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Game of Thrones now with extra rape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, though, just the fact that every old guy at the bar wasn't immediately like, and then he looked at her with a rapingly glare and thought about raping her. And then I was just like, ugh, George, I hate this guy. She's like eight. Like, can we just not? God, this sucks. I hate this book. I want out. Ugh, yeah. The worst.
Yeah.
And also, like, the fact that they swapped Arya to Sansa, like, the book is a lot worse, the Roose Bolton thing. Like, God, it's way worse.
Because she's, like, 5 years younger.
Well, that, and it's, like, a replacement. It's just some poor peasant girl with her saying
it's
Arya.
It's just Jane Poole.
It's like, holy crap, so it's even younger. It's, like, literally just...
I haven't seen the show, so they changed it.
I haven't seen it either, but I'm aware that they basically merged Jane Poole's story with Sansa's story to cut down on... It's to cut down on time.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
I mean...
Because they have to do Sansa, right? And then something has to happen to somebody like Jane Poole, like that Jane Poole character has to exist to tell these stories, so they just put them together.
The only reason it bugs me is because I know that he's 100% given up on the books at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and he's... Yeah. He hasn't said it, but he has.
Yeah.
And that he's using the show as the actual, like, forward driving force for, like, the rest of the story.
Yeah.
So it's, the show is actually just canon now.
Yeah.
Which is, and the book is, like...
Which in some ways is problematic to me, because they've done a couple things I've noticed in this season already have been, like, bad storytelling has happened already.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Sorry for those of you that haven't been keeping up on the show.
Yeah, should probably at the end of this podcast be like, hey, watch out for spoilers. Yeah,
tune out now. But they kill off Barristan Selmy for no reason.
What?
Oh.
Like he's kind of a superfluous character, though.
He just
like,
gets killed. But the point is that he's in the books, he wasn't.
Yeah, but in the show up to this point, he's been virtually irrelevant.
As soon as she gets Tyrion, she's got too many cooks. She's got Grey Worm. Yeah. She's got...
How could he die, though?
Just in an alley. He just gets killed.
That's so...
Like, he's fighting a bunch of the Sons of the Harpy.
Yeah, pisses me off.
Yeah, he just sort of gets killed.
He's not valiant. He killed like 80 dudes.
Yeah. This is the Sword of the Morning, but it was the afternoon, so...
Yeah. He's not the Sword of the Morning. Oh, he's the Barristan and the Bold. The Sword of the Morning was Arthur Dayne.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
But yeah, I don't know. I just felt like... They killed him because they weren't doing anything with him. Not that his death moved the story in any relevant way.
Maybe the actor
was like, "Hey George, we probably shouldn't put so many rape scenes in." He was just like, "Hmm."
No, I saw a brief interview with the actor, and he's like, "Yeah, I saw my schedule for this season. And it was like, because I've read the books and I was up, so I was expecting this to be like a sweet season for me. And then I saw my filming schedule, and I was like, "Oh crap, they wrote me out."
Yep.
That's such BS.
But again, you have Mormont, Tyrion, Grey Worm, and then her boyfriend from the. It's like, and then you have
Dario Naharis.
How many dudes does she need like telling her what to do?
I was gonna say, I actually already felt that way in the books. I was like, can we just get rid of everybody but Tyrion and just have Tyrion hook up with?
Yeah,
like literally hook up with Daenerys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man.
This whole thing is just disappointing to fans of the book.
Yeah. And,
like, the show was originally, like, the first season, you were like, if you were a fan of the book, you were and then as it just has gone on and on and on,
you're
and
like,
on,
oh,
like,
God,
just,
they're catching up.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, God, they've
gone. I'm on the exact, because I didn't start reading the books.
See,
the show got me to read the books.
Well, and here's the other thing to understand about this is that, like, I read the books, like, 15 years ago.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And so, like.
Imagine that.
The show got me to read the books. And then as I read the books, I got to book 5. And I was like, oh, he's got Stephen King syndrome. He's just like, I have made money. I literally don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Here is a pile of crap. I will submit another pile of crap all the ways down the road. Like, book 5 is just, particularly in comparison to the first 2 books, it's just so slow and bad.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Not even the third book is my favorite.
Like, the third book is, the first three are really good. The trilogy is good.
Yeah.
And then, like, I felt like the fourth book was the weakest of the books, and book 5 was a little better than the fourth book.
I think book 5 is the weakest.
So far, the book 5 is
Book 5 is the messiest, but it had, like...
What happens in book 5?
Very little. The reason...
Nothing happens in book 4 either.
Yeah, the reason...
They're both bad. That's the truth of it.
So the reason that book 5 might be slightly more palatable or slightly more offensive, depending on your point of view, is
because
that
the characters.
Book 5 had all the good characters in it.
Yeah,
book 4 had all the crappy characters. Like, oh,
that's
God,
not true.
Nothing happened. It's happening with all the crappy
Tyrion,
characters.
Like, Tyrion and Arya are in both book 4 and book 5.
True.
So,
Yeah, but book five was more about Daenerys.
But you like read a like you turn a page in book four and it says Samwell and you're like, what?
Yeah.
God damn it. Yeah.
Speed reading. Yeah.
Like I would even like flip forward a couple of chapters and be like, do I care about the next chapter? Like, and you see who the name is, and it would be like, you know. It would be like the Sand Snake or something like that, and I'd be like, "God damn it! Like, I'm just gonna read this next week."
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Whereas like before, like you know, you'd be like, you know, I'd be like Sansa, skip forward, Tyrion. All right, keep reading.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yep. Be like Sansa, Jaime.
Yeah,
I'm intrigued.
Yeah,
go on, George R. R. Martin, and now you're like, please stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but finish, but stop.
Also, half the chapters in book four were like brand new character, like no name characters. Yeah, they didn't even have the names; they were just like titles.
Freaking,
remember? Yeah. Like,
yeah,
that's stupid. Like Robert Jordan syndrome. Where yeah, he'll open with the whole book, like the prologue. Like you haven't read this series for a year and a half because that's how long it takes me to write a book.
A year and a half,
like 5 years.
Yeah, that's
sure, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Infinite time, and then it'll open, and you're like this character, and he'll talk about it like you know him, and you're like, I have no idea who this is.
Yeah,
it's like a minor character from book three, maybe. I don't remember. The worst. And then he introduces five more characters.
Yeah.
Can't stand it. Don't do that, please, George R. R.
Martin. Too many cooks.
So what finishes first, Game of Thrones or Name of the Wind? Kingkiller Chronicles.
Are you talking about the books?
Either.
I mean, the
Kingkiller Chronicles.
The Kingkiller Chronicles only has one more book.
Yeah, but do you think it's ever coming out?
It's only been like four years.
I'm just curious. Also, it doesn't seem like the third book could possibly fit into the third book.
I think that Rothfuss is having problems with that. If you like, pay attention to his Twitter and Facebook and stuff, because he's constantly talking about how the process of editing it is like a giant nightmare, and I think he's having trouble with just like fitting. But he's also basically promised people that like there's not going to be like I'm not going to expand it out past three books. Like it's just going to be three and done. And I think he's having problems being like, this book is 10,000 pages long. Yeah.
Also, the success is the worst thing that can happen to authors because they get successful. It's so similar to movie directors.
It's such a terrible thing to say.
It's the George Lucas problem. They get successful and then they think they can do no wrong, so they stop listening to their editors and their books get terrible.
I don't think that is the true.
True.
I don't think that's true with Rothfuss specifically. I actually really enjoy like his success because he does a lot of stuff. He's like very closely linked with the Penny Arcade guys. He does a lot of stuff with them. Like Tycho actually edited a lot of book two for him, and he does a lot of stuff with them like at PAXs and everything like that. So he's like all over the place at PAX, and then he's posting. If you follow his blog or whatever, he posts all these like crazy awesome stories about the things that he's doing. Like he's basically like a nerd celebrity at this point.
Sure.
And he's just posting all these but unlike George, who just from what I understand would like just go on like Caribbean vacations and do nothing. Like Rothfuss like goes to like conventions and like nerds out with people and like role plays, you know, for the internet and like all this other stuff. And it's like really I actually really enjoy it. Like
it was
success.
An exaggerated point, but right? I've seen it happen before where it's like they've obviously like basically told their editors to go for themselves, and I'll do what I want, and this is a disaster.
I felt
that way about, sorry to interrupt, that way about book two of Name of the Wind. Mm. Like, there was, like, 100-page sections where I was like, why didn't this get cut?
It was weaker than the first book. I'm not going to say that, you know, is not true, but I still enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, I still enjoyed it.
I did, too.
I just felt it could have been tighter.
But the other thing I wanted to point out about Rothfuss, too, is that, like, as I've gotten to know him more and more, like, through the things that he's been posting online and, like, the appearances that he's had, like, at the conventions and stuff like that, like, I've actually loved him more and more. Like, I'm like, this guy is awesome. Like, he's, like, a guy that I want to be friends with, that I want to hang out with, that I want to, like, do stuff with, that I want to, like, see him doing more things.
Oh, cool.
Whereas, like, with R.R. Martin, like, the more I see of him, I have the opposite reaction. I'm like, he's kind of terrible.
Yeah.
Like, he's just an old, curmudgeonly, like, terrible
it's
man.
It's like, yeah. But the cool thing about him is he can literally just go to the Game of Thrones theme park, a.k.a. Thailand, and get his, like, full-on Marlon Brando. Just, like, straight. He's just living the dream, like, no, 9 months of the year.
Cutting you off, John. I don't know if you
I was just going to point out a couple things. The thing I think I most appreciate about Rothfuss is he's such a wordsmith. Like, if you look at the quality of the writing of the books, it's incredible compared to most things that I read.
And yeah, his command of English is very good.
Yeah, it's
very good.
It's incredible. And his world building is probably the most complete that I've seen in a fantasy author in a long time.
I don't know about world building because he didn't give it doesn't give us a great deal of setting information, but he does.
I'm sorry, how everything works, how magic works.
No, right? He built the world a ton. Like, what do you mean you don't?
There's like, because he talks about foreign countries, like he'd give people throwaways about where they're from, and there's a lot of information being built, but there's not like he hasn't had a ton of time to build like the entirety of the world. But yeah, what John is saying, I 100% agree with. His mechanics for like the magic system is really cool.
Well, yeah, I mean he's got all that, but like he also does a lot of just world building in general too. Like you got a really good sense of like that city, Tarbin, the city that he grew up in. And then you get a really good sense of the country that he moves to in book two, that he's like doing stuff for the whatever the
Adem.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, his setting building is very
well. Like he goes and hangs out with them, and you realize like, you know, there's different societies and civilizations and everything like that. I was talking more when he was like in the guy
working for the Marquis. Was it the Marquis he was working
for? Something like that. It was some special name, some fancy name. I don't know. But. I can't remember. I haven't read it in like a year.
No, I'm looking forward to the third book. I just wish it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like many other people.
Spoiler speculation time. Like, what do you think he locked in the box?
My God, it's been so long since I've read it. I hardly even remember the box.
I never even thought about it. I'm not the kind of person that like thinks about that kind of stuff. I don't know why. It seems silly. It seems foolish. Like, but once you had pointed it out, like, I've just never been good at figuring out mysteries and stuff like that, like, in book stories or whatever. But you pointed out that you thought it was his name.
Yeah, he locked his name in the box so that he could better hide himself.
Yeah.
Because, like, all through the second book, he tries to do things and he just can't.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not Kvothe.
He's a shadow of his former self, essentially. Yeah.
I don't know. If I wanted to figure it out, I'd have Marshall read it and tell me.
Yeah, Marshall is.
Nathan, too.
Eerie with that. God, I was watching Terminator 2 with Marshall the other day, and watching movies and doing things with Marshall is like way better than doing them on your own, because he provides all this like context that you just had no idea, and even if it's wrong, like it's like better than the reality of the situation.
Yeah,
like he was going over, I was noting something stupid about Terminator 2, or you know how the T-1000 keeps like switching back into the cop. Mm-hmm. In situations where, like, the cop makes no sense whatsoever to be, like, in the situation. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to get Sarah Connor, and he kills the security guard. And then he switches into the security guard for, like, 10 seconds and talks to the lady at the desk.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, walking around the hall, and he immediately switches back into the cop. And it's like, God, T-1000, like, you're an idiot. Like, just stay the security guard. Like, as soon as they see the cop, they're going to be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Marshall,
despite the fact that the real reason is probably because that actor was...
Exactly. I mean, obviously that. Yeah. Obviously that. Like, that's the obvious reason.
John,
like,
Doggett.
You do the nitpicking thing, right, when you're watching the movie, and I'm just like, oh, God, the T-1000 is kind of an idiot. Like, why doesn't it just stay the guy? And Marshall's like, actually, I think the T-1000, like, develops, like, these weird personality quirks as, like, the longer and longer it stays back in time. And he starts, like, giving me this, like, in-depth explanation about how it, like, goes, like, crazy throughout the movie. And, like, it, like, starts to, like, show these, like, weird, like, quirks, like, as it's killing people. And, like, it just, like, becomes essentially
a whole other story.
Like, essentially becomes, like, sort of, like, tied to the cop form that it was in. Like, and it's kind of, like, going crazy. And I was like, that's awesome. And as we're watching the movie, like, none of that stuff's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just, and at the end of the movie, Marshall's like, oh, maybe I made some of that up, or maybe I remembered it wrong or whatever. But I was like, I don't care. Like, that's better than, like, I'm using that as my new, like, Terminator headcanon, basically. Like, that's way better.
It's also like, I think the heat affects its thinking in, like, hotter environments.
Yeah.
It behaves more erratically.
Yeah. Hmm. It's like, that's better. Like, you should, goddamn it, Marshall, you should do this. Like, for anyway.
So it's kind of weird. When I was younger, I was really impressed by the big, thick books. So you'd look at, like, George R. R. Martin, you'd be like, or Robert Jordan is the king of, like, just a ton of prose.
Yeah, the book is 1,100 pages.
That's what started me in fantasy was The Eye of the World.
Yeah, and so you're just like, and that's what you're, now I'm impressed with, like, Jim Butcher. I'm like, wow, 400-page book, complete story, a lot of fun. This is, like, really well done.
Does it take me 10 years to read?
Yeah, punched
Most recently, it was The Ocean at the End of the Lane. I've, like, blasted through that Gaiman book in, I don't know, it takes, like, an hour and a half. And the story is, like, captivating and thought-provoking, and it says something about him. And, yeah, it was spectacular. It took almost no time.
I mean, most good stories don't take very long to tell. I think they have much more impact that way. Usually if it takes a long time to tell, it's because there's a lot of extraneous bloat that has nothing to do with the story.
Bingo.
But sometimes you want to spend a lot of time with your the
sure.
characters.
Sure, and I think fantasy novels are probably the best place for that. But
what was the famous example of that, that old author that got paid by the word?
Dickens.
Yeah, and what was the, I can't remember the book.
Well, I mean, he writes, like, he's written many, Tale of Two Cities.
It was a Tale of Two Cities specifically.
Yeah.
That, like, that book specifically was
bloated. Everything Dickens wrote is bloated. I mean, the stories are good, but they could have been much shorter than they were.
Right.
That's why Hemingway is a master.
I need to give him another shot. You've told me this before. I freaking hated him when I was a kid.
Yeah. I mean, his...
Like, I freaking hated him.
His prose is spare. He only uses the words that he needs to use, and he tells the story he came to tell, and then there's nothing extra to it.
Yeah. Like I said, fat. From the perspective of a child, and by a child, I mean like a 14-year-old, like I was in high school, you know. From the perspective of a high schooler, he does not resonate.
Yeah, because no, you haven't lived, you've had like virtually no hardships of life, unless like you've had like a really terrible childhood, but for the most part, you haven't had the kind of hardships in life that he writes about. And he doesn't write like directly as in like, here are the hardships of life. It's like, here's this guy who goes through some shit and it's awful. And you respect it more the more life experience you have.
I should give it another shot. Like what does it say about me though? Because I loved Steinbeck in high school.
That's surprising that you like Steinbeck and you didn't like Hemingway.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Steinbeck was Grapes of Wrath, right?
Yeah.
Grapes of Wrath and
Mice
and
Men,
right? what's the one that everyone reads about the horse?
Mr. Ed.
Yep.
Black Beauty.
That's it. Yep.
Sorry.
I won't remember what it is. Somebody will point it out, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cultured talk today.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Well, it's run a gambit.
It has run a gambit.
Gamut.
A gamut.
Gamut. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You good correction. Right.
I'm sorry. I only said it because he said it.
I know. Damn you, Keith.
Hey, I appreciate the correction.
Mm-hmm. I'll get your hand cut off on the NPR.
Don't want to sound like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Keith, welcome back to the podcast. We missed you last week.
Yeah. I was on a whirlwind tour of Wisconsin, basically.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, the top recruit was being heavily recruited. Yeah. They gave him free hot dogs.
I did not get any free hot dogs.
Did you drink
Did
you drink any sweet beer?
I did get a free Japanese meal courtesy of a friend of mine. But.
Oh, Japanese and Wisconsin.
Hand in hand.
The most official of Japanese meals.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It was good. It was teriyaki.
I'm sure it was fun.
Of course it was teriyaki.
Teriyaki cheese curds.
No.
Classic Japanese Wisconsin food.
I guess it's chicken, because that's the only thing Keith eats.
Not the only thing Keith eats.
He eats
the only
hot
thing
dogs.
Keith eats at Japanese restaurants.
Sigh.
Japanese macaroni and cheese.
Well, we can't start the podcast because John just walked away.
It's classic John.
And it is now time to start the podcast.
It is exactly now time
basically
to start.
He
timed it perfectly.
He's just murdering the timing.
Basically, John is just taking a dump all over the podcast.
Yeah. We got our flow moving. Like, we were slow and crappy when we started, and now we're like, yep, we've got the talking engines going. Then John's like, now's a good time to interview.
Yeah, I'll just go. Time to drop a deuce.
Yep. Cool this down with a pound of shit.
Now every time I hear deuce, I think of, was it
your
you talking?
My buddy said
that. He had not a friend, but like a guy.
A popular guy
in
high
school.
Yeah. His name was Deuce.
My nickname is the Deuce.
Yeah.
You're like,
and I was like, why is your nickname poop? Like, what is your, like, it's Deuce. Everybody just calls me Deuce. I know. Everybody's calling you a turd. Like, it's not work. You sound like an idiot. Yeah.
And he's like, no, you know, like. Number two.
Like, yeah,
exactly.
That's
what I
case
said.
And point. And like,
perfect.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's awesome when like they're trying to bully you and then they can't because you get hung up on like a technicality, the deuce technicality.
It's like, I actually find it really awesome to be called.
Yeah. Like, okay. You want to be called turd.
What did I miss?
Hey, who knows? You got up and chose to walk away when we were ready to start the podcast.
We're just trying to keep the flow going.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to pee.
I have no earthly notion what number we're on.
225.
222.
Wow. 222.
The deuces.
The deuces.
The
deuces are wild.
We're almost caught up to Focus and Fury.
Yeah, exactly. It's like my nickname is like Deuces Are Wild.
Wait a minute. We're almost caught up to Focus and Fury.
We're on 223. You guys will get there.
You know, I've actually had a weird hankering for, like, before we start the podcast. I kind of want to role play.
Talk to your wife.
Sweet RP.
I don't really know what to answer to this.
That was not exactly what I meant. But no, I was thinking about checking out 5e, but I don't know if anybody's...
Just off the old pizza delivery man and the good burglar.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. I got a box of costumes if you want. They probably won't fit, but
no, if you just I'll get them on. The front, they'll just they'll have a different meaning.
It'll just be like a bib, and then it's easier to just rip it
like
off.
Like they're normal costumes for me, but they'll be very sexy for you. They'll show a lot of skin.
Aren't those guys doing an Miami? You want you hopping on Miami?
Wait, where's this?
What?
Miami.
Miami's doing a podcast of their role playing game.
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing Iron Kingdoms, though. Okay. He's talking D&D.
Yeah, I actually was just thinking about D&D. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. I played some D&D at PAX with some friends. I've played 5e. I've played the playtest version of 5e. And I've also watched a lot of nerd podcasts where they play D&D 5e because I'm a tremendous dork. But no, it's good. It's like all the best parts of 3.5. And then they pretty much just flushed fourth down the toilet, which is good in a lot of people's opinions because fourth was weird. So it's a lot more back to the old system, but then they simplify a lot of things. Like there's not like they don't have a complicated system of bonuses and penalties anymore. It's basically just, you know, doing certain things will grant you advantage and doing certain things will grant you disadvantage. And getting advantage just means that you get to roll twice and you take the higher result, and disadvantage means you get to roll twice and you take the lower result. So you know, they're beneficial and penalties, but they're not. You don't have to sit there and, you know, calculate.
You don't need an abacus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so I get +2 for this, and I get +2 for this, but I get -4 for this, and my, you know, blah 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 blah.
Oh, and I need to make a saving throw. No, I don't get -2 for that. So yeah. I remember those were the days.
So it's a lot. It's both more complicated than 4th ed and a lot simpler than 4th ed. So it's, I don't know, it's good. I like it. It's back to the D&D roots, it feels. It feels more like D&D to me than 4th Ed did. I don't know if any of you guys have ever played D&D.
I played some 4th Edition, and it didn't feel like a role-playing game much at all.
3, 5, and 4th Ed. 4th Ed was fine for me, but I only played it under Brent, and Brent's a good DM, and basically I'm just like, okay, so this is what I want to do. And he's like, okay. And like,
it doesn't really matter what edition you're playing.
Yeah, exactly.
But so I mean, that's just good. That just means he's a good DM.
Yeah,
I'm surprised to hear you've played third ed.
I played 3.5 when I was in high school.
What class does Josh play? What's Josh's favorite?
Bard.
Josh's favorite.
Yeah, buddy.
Oh man,
bard.
Yeah. I always played a bard that used a whip. That's like my
a whip.
Yeah,
nice.
Reach weapons.
Well, it's literally because I would always want to use it for like non-conventional, like non-attacking things,
like swinging over
cliffs. Yeah, exactly. And things out of people's hands and like breaking like vases or like glass baubles across the room or stuff like that. I wanted to not be like a combat character but contribute in like non-traditional ways. And the whip, like, as long as you have a DM that's like, yeah, that's cool, I can see how you could do that with a whip. Like, make this roll or whatever, which every DM that I've played for has been like that. Like,
yeah.
So, it was always just like, start with a bard, add a whip, let's see where we go from there.
I always played a bard, too.
Yeah.
You know, just because they were terrible. They were so much fun because you could do so much more. Yeah, it was exactly like you said. Like,
yeah.
I liked having a lot of options.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, corner case tricks that I could pull out when I needed to, but otherwise not being like the focus of things. You know,
I had no interest in being the guy that like did the max damage or anything like that, but I really, really enjoyed
the story.
The story and the idea of being like the enabler. So like I would take like all the things that would buff my, and so like I played with like James and Logan. I don't know if you guys know Logan.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know
James
Logan.
And Logan and Guy and those guys under Brent. and it was just like basically like they always got to do whatever their like super awesome power was, because I'm just like, take plus two, take plus three, take plus four. And they're just like, you're awesome. And I was like,
Yeah, I know exactly how you feel.
My favorite characters, I always like to play rogues, but not to like backstab and deal damage. I always like to specialize in something, so I'd pick something like...
No, not to backstab the enemy, to backstab your friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily.
Right.
Only half the time.
Sure. Yeah.
But I like to do things like specialize in forgery.
Yeah.
Or specialize in performance. Uh-huh. So there's things you could do. Like, I remember in, I think, one... We were trying to like figure out what was going on, and I wanted to like pickpocket and search people's pockets. So I started juggling, and then I started juggling things out of people's pockets. Like I'd pick their pockets, and you know, like people would be like, "Wait a minute, that's my whatever." And that's so I would use performance to sort of like cover the fact that I was actually just really rifling through everybody's stuff.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the kind of thing that I enjoyed doing. Like the same thing, I don't really. You know, when I was younger and first started role-playing, it was all about combat characters. You'd be like, how much damage can I do?
Yeah.
How many arrows can I fire in a turn? What broken elf can I make this week? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
See, that's the way I was in Shadowrun. I would just break the hell out of that game. And then when I started playing D&D, it was like the opposite. I was just like, I want to play Bard.
Yeah. You know, like basically all I've ever wanted in the role-playing games. And it's the reason I really like the White Wolf systems, like the original White Wolf systems. Those were probably my favorite, partially because they were like modern day settings, so I enjoyed RPG in modern day settings. But all I ever want out of a system is like some loose rules to adjudicate things that are obviously like difficult to do, and then the rest of, and like a relatively streamlined combat system for the same reason, and then just like the sort of open ability to kind of go with whatever you imagine, because that's what role playing is. Like I don't need to the min maxing thing is completely foreign to me. I don't understand that.
I love building characters.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just had this like itch recently. I'm like, I kind of want to role play. It's weird. I was waxing nostalgic a little bit. I don't know what got me on that. I was thinking about just hanging out with my friends in high school or whatever, and the things that we do. And
it's somewhat random. I don't know. We haven't talked about role playing in forever.
Yeah, so it's been a while.
Marshall's been talking about it a little bit lately.
Yeah, I always hear Marshall talking about it and get reports from his gaming groups.
Yeah.
We should start doing, we go to all these cons, like whenever we have like the five of us at a con, we should just do like a role play night at like every con. That'd be super fun. I actually, one of the things, I'm like okay at role playing. The thing, obviously, I ruin it for GMs because I just make too much fun of everything. Like everything. So like the group is like loving it. We're all laughing. But like if he names a character any kind of questionable name, he's going to hate life, and he's going to change the, you know, like, or whatever. It's
see, but if you were in my, if I were your like DM or GM, and you were in my group, like I would totally play to that, right? Like, like why wouldn't I? Like every other bad guy would be a Durst brother.
No, it's just, some GMs like take themselves too serious, and then after everybody's like laughing for like, you know, they take it like I'm not really making fun of their storytelling. I'm actually just trying to keep it. Like, that's
keep
just
it
my style
and fun,
or whatever. And some GMs don't respond well, but. When I GM, it's like super. I'm like the master of like the 1 to 2 session, like you know.
Yeah.
But I always do Cthulhu based, so like it doesn't matter what system I play. It's like D&D or werewolf or whatever. It's always like a Cthulhu.
The old Lovecraft based Cthulhu like RPG was actually the Arkham Horror.
No, I loved
RPG
it.
Was
I
awesome.
Super loved
Call
it.
Call of Cthulhu is what all my friends on Long Island play, and they love it.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I absolutely love it, mostly because. I love playing it and GMing it mostly because there's, like, a finality to it. Like, it doesn't really matter if you min-max. Like, nobody benefits
nobody
from being a min-maxing turn. You may as well just have a whip and play, like, a 600-pound guy with one leg. You're like, it doesn't. it totally doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, you're
it's also,
all dead.
Yeah, if you make a mistake, you're done. Yeah. So,
it's also, the setting and, like, well, particularly, like, the time period. Like I feel like for the purpose of telling stories, like, it's awesome because... You're, like, in a sort of modern area, so you have some, like, modern conveniences, but you don't have, like, cell phones and stuff, so you can still, like, build, like, a lot of suspense and things. And yeah. It's just, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Nice. So are we going to set that up, then? Are we going to do some role-playing?
We should. Like, I like the con thing, because I don't know if you guys are good at, like, doing little one-offs.
I definitely
can take turns doing one-offs.
Yeah, I love doing one-offs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm in the same vein, I guess. I'm a terrible GM. For, like, a campaign, because I will lose interest, and it'll just die.
Yeah.
Like, it just dies. But I'm a very good GM for, like, a one or two off, because I can just spin a good tale.
I should introduce you guys to my friend Matt, who is, like, my friend that he basically comes back like once a year
to do a Shadowrun deal.
Yeah. And we try and get like the old group like from high school together, but it's getting harder and harder to get people together. But like he was our GM like back in the day, and I love like his GMing style and everything, cuz he's very like fly by the seat of his pants.
Yeah.
You know?
He's quite good.
And yeah, you Keith played with him when he was in town this time. We did like a game with Keith and Jackie and some other people.
Thanks for the invite.
I think I did.
So invited. Seriously, thanks for the invite.
You're welcome. I think I invited everybody. But yeah, so we should try and get, because he comes back like usually once a year, and that's the big hit thing where he's like, yeah, let's get a role playing session together. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm all about one offs. I've just like been doing them for like once a year for the last like 10 years.
Well, I suppose we have a War Machine podcast that we're supposed to.
I suppose we do.